Russia was the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. And they'd say, oh, but aren't you so glad that you're in America? I said, well, I know a lot of Russian filmmakers, and they have a lot more freedom than I have. All they have to do is be careful about criticizing the government.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jason Miles, and welcome to another episode of Pop Life, a show where we take more fun, deep dives into different aspects of pop culture, movies, and of course, something I spent and my co-host spent a long time doing, and he still does. I guess I still do it, but I feel like it doesn't count because I don't tour. I feel like not touring makes me more of a hobbyist, and I am totally okay with that. My good buddy Conan Neutron and I are going to do something a little different when it comes to a music review show. Instead of taking a look at a specific band or genre, we're going to be exploring a different year and the releases of that year, asking the question, was this the best year of music ever? Also, we're going to open the phone lines for a bit on these shows because we want to hear what you have to say about this as well. Also, a little plug, since this show is about music, I wrote a thing or two in a mini book you can purchase that's in its second edition. I was a teenage anarchist. I did sell out. I sold out and made this much money on it. I outsold Slavoj Žižek. And it is the number one book on everyday analysis. Thank you to all of you. If you haven't gotten it, pick it up. Today, we're going to examine the year of our Lord, 1979. Disco dominates the charts, but there are still some seminal releases from artists that will go on to dominate the 80s and beyond. Prince and Michael Jackson released classic material in 79. Why don't we take a quick look before I bring in Conan at some of the notable releases for the year. Joy Division, Unknown Pleasures, Pink Floyd, The Wall, Talking Heads, Fear of Music, AC/DC, Highway to Hell. If I'm not mistaken, that's the last Bon Scott record before he tragically passes away. Gang of Four, Entertainment, has one of my favorite songs on there. Black Flag, Nervous Breakdown, The Germs, G.I., Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Damn the Torpedoes, Blondie, Eat the Beat. Video Kill the Radio Star comes out in 1979 as well. So many great records as usual. We want to hear what you guys have to say. We're going to open up the phone lines in a little bit. But first, I want to bring in my co-host, the host of the long-running Protonic Reversal podcast. If you are music fans, especially of alternative, I don't like to call it alternative rock. There's something pretentious about saying alternative rock. I don't want to give it a name. If you like rock music, if you like guitar-oriented music, Conan has maybe one of the best interview shows out there. It's him and Rick BDO right now. He doesn't have as many subscribers, but that's a travesty of justice. Please welcome Conan Neutron.
And that's something you can follow as subscribing today.
Hey, you know, you have some top tier guests, always interesting conversations. It's also one of those things where if you don't know the artist, sometimes the conversation is so interesting that you will delve into someone's catalog.
Sure. Yeah, that's the idea. And I was actually looking through everything that was, which you did a good job of overviewing 1979. And I was like, oh, I've had a bunch of these folks on the show. I had Hugo from Gang of Four on the show, and it's trippy to think about the fact that you know, we were both babies.
Yeah.
You know, to put it bluntly.
We're same age. So yeah, we're both about 2 years old in this year. And I didn't realize that Gang of Four record was that old.
Yeah.
You can hear it in the recording. There's a certain tone from the 70s that I really appreciate, especially bass tones from the 70s. I don't know if you're the same way.
Yeah, really. Well, on that record, especially, even more so than Solid Gold, which I think is equally as good of a record, but not quite as influential. It's kind of just austere sounding, like very odd. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of interesting sounding records, but not necessarily good sounding records. Like not in the in terms of it mm-hmm. sounds like a band. If you think of a good sounding record as a band in a room, but like bands that like put out really cool, Three Imaginary Boys by The Cure. Right. I mean, that's like The Cure before they were The Cure.
Well, Robert Smith still had like regular clothes.
Yeah. Well, and like, yeah. And they were more rockish at that point, too. But then the way that that record was produced. And actually, I think this is interesting because my friends at the 1001 Album Complaints podcast, which is
who are coming on this show to discuss 1984. April 6th.
Fantastic. Fantastic. That's going to be great. They were going over one of the early Cure records, and there was so much meddling by the record company, like including putting that version of a Foxy Lady sung by the bass player that like everyone's like, that was like something we did at practice. We don't want that on the record. But there was so much interference with that record that it led to Robert Smith basically overcorrecting the entire rest of his career and led to him kind of making the ethos that we know of with The Cure, which is the more, you know, somber Disintegration and, you know, like the more gothy kind of stuff. But like he never wanted to be out of control in his own band ever again. So it's fantastic story. It's mm-hmm. a horrifying experience, I'm sure. But even just away from The Cure, I mean, Regatta de Blanc, The Police.
You Can know? We talk a little bit about
Damn the Torpedoes you mentioned too. I love Damn the Torpedoes. I'm a big Tom Petty fan, but like,
are you really?
A huge Tom Petty fan. Yeah. You wouldn't necessarily know it, but I think dude just writes good songs. You know?
I got to see him live right before he died. I'm a big Police fan, actually.
I love the Police too.
I think those dudes did something that a lot of bands can't do, which is release, was it five records?
Right.
Five.
I think it's about five. Yeah. And each one is like unique and interesting and
each one a banger, call mm-hmm. it quits.
Yeah. And I think people, the individual personalities, mostly Sting's mm-hmm. Kind of overshadow the music. And I think that's too bad because you wouldn't have this. I call that stuff music for dentist office. You know, like the Sting solo stuff.
You don't like Sting's first. I don't mind dentist office music. That's the problem.
Oh, yeah. The Blue Turtles, whatever the hell that is. Like, fine. But like people short sell. They kind of retroactively apply that to the Police. Like, no, the Police was a hell ass rock band. They were good, man. Like and you could make any pack of white boys that appropriates reggae is always a little sus. But they did so a little more earnestly than, like, say, you know, was it UB40 or whatever that. Well, actually, earnestness wasn't the problem with UB40. That's a different conversation. But the Police, weirdly, as a band, has largely been written out of modern history, and which is fascinating. But then there's stuff like STC, right? Like Drums and Wires. That came out that year.
That came out. I didn't even realize that they were that old as well. And I think 79 is an interesting year because that's when, as I'm pulling up right now, some of the records.
Buzzcocks, Different Kind of Tension. You know, not their biggest record, but one of my favorites of theirs. It's like weird as hell in a good way. You know.
So we have some super chats we have to get to.
Okay,
first
okay.
of all, Strom McCallum is making fun of me because I said I'm a big Police fan.
Yeah, not of the organization of the band, to be clear. Yeah.
He called Jason's Blue Lives Matter Miles. That's fair. That's pretty fair.
Yeah, all right.
Like I think you know I'm a big groove person.
Sure.
And that whole band was locked in for those five records.
Oh yeah, man.
On such another fucking level that by the time they get to Synchronicity, it does feel like the end.
Right. There's something. Mm-hmm. There's something about that record that does feel like, well, there's nowhere else these guys can go at this point. No, I highly agree, and I think a lot of times people know the hits, right? Mm-hmm. But especially the first two records, pretty much all bangers. There's some trash from the trash can on a couple of those later records. Like, okay, you could miss me with that song. But
the really weird one on Synchronicity where it's like, is that my mother on the phone?
Yeah, it's like, you don't, that didn't need to be there. Nobody was looking for that.
I was like, dude, you guys really need to lay off the booger shit. There's no way you can tell me that was a sober tune. We have another super chat that is aimed at you.
Okay, cool.
Can you read it on the screen?
Conan, I need advice. My best gal and I go way back to a time when we were wolves, and she tolerates my wild antics. How do I ask her to adult prom? First of all, fantastic. If this was Scrabble for like song titles and album titles, like you would get like a triple comment score. Fantastic. Yeah. If I was really clever, I would answer back with one of my own song titles. It's too early for that. Sorry. But acknowledge and thank you.
Yeah, my friend Wayne Overland says Talking Heads, whatever came out, right? Yeah, Talking Heads, Fear of Music.
Fear of Music, right.
1979 is this year.
Van Halen 2 was 79.
Let's look at Van Halen 2, because I want to go over Van Halen 2 and see what's on it, because I'm not exactly sure what's
on it. That's the one that it has Dance the Night Away, one of my favorite songs.
Ooh.
Beautiful Girls.
Conan's a bigger Van Halen fan than I thought.
I love Van Halen. Somebody get me a doctor.
Dance the Night Away. Somebody get me a doctor.
Doctor.
Light Up the Sky. DOA is on the record.
Dead or Alive, man.
Yeah, it's a damn good record.
It is. And it's interesting. Every one of these like classic Van Halen records has some goof ass covers on them too. Like every single one of them. But that's because that's how they kind of plied their trade.
Two is one of the two. I don't know. Van Halen 1 to me is an album cover that there's a few album covers for me. I don't know if you're the same way where they're just kind of etched into my mind as this is the kind of album cover I want.
Right, right.
Van Halen 1. Van Halen 2 looks like a serious, like this is a serious band.
Serious business. Oh, they start with that Dee Dee Warwick song. You're no good, you're no good, you're no good, baby, you're no good. It still bangs. Don't get me wrong. It's just, it's wild that for as big of a rock band as they're almost like sort of super cash about what they put on their records, where it's like although I feel like the first one it's hard to mess with Running with the Devil into Eruption, right, if I remember correctly.
Other way around.
You're right. Mm-hmm. That's as a 1-2, that's pretty great. And then but then they flex with doing the Kink song. What if these guys are on the cocaine? What is going on?
Oh, dude. Yeah. They found a good mix for like four records. Good balance.
Well, and a lot of people that come from punk, for whatever reason, kind of discount Van Halen. It's like, no way, man. That's just good rock music.
You can't discount Van Halen. You can discount the Sammy Hagar years I'm a fan of the Sammy Hagar years. I do want to preface that by saying that.
Yeah.
But
it's a different thing.
It's adult sound. It's a very adult sound.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't
this be love? It's got what it takes. Yeah, okay, sure. Whatever. All right. They're having fun up there. Good times. But
that's how you know we made it, Conan, when we can do that kind of stuff. Like,
right.
Wear those pajama pants on stage and just be rocking out of stadium in pajama pants.
People are just like, yeah, dude. Michael Anthony is definitely a relaxed times hashtag goals rocker for sure.
Kenzo Shibata, friend of show, friend in real life. Kenzo, this is the meanest thing you've ever said.
This man said this. I can't.
The police walk so 311 could run.
I'm so angry right now. I was in your town last night. I would have fought you if you said that to me.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I forget that you live somewhat near Kenzo.
Yeah, I don't. We have never hung out in person though. Like I was in Chicago. You live in Chicago around Chicago, right?
And yeah. No, he lives in Chicago.
Not to narc him out. It's like, hey, everybody, this man's in Chicago. No, I was. Oh yeah, Van Sharon. I forgot about that.
I won't acknowledge that.
Yeah, don't acknowledge it. That's more hate speech. It's okay. but I was in. Last night, watching our tour mates and McCluskey rock it at the Vic Theater, and it was a lovely time.
Before we get into some of this music, I would like you to talk a little bit about that tour, because as someone that's been doing this as long as you have, people always tell you that music is a young person's game.
Yes, we love talking about
to a certain extent. I get where that idea comes from. But also, if you do it long enough,
right,
if you can survive long enough, good things can happen to you at an advanced age. And
advanced age, like, what, you have like a walker?
Hey, I know for I know that that backstage smells like Bengay. There's all kind of yoga being done before the show.
Look, man, I mean, the idea that you know, rock music, which at this point is a, you know, a niche interest, really, for a large portion of the world, is exclusively for young people, that goes back literally to the 1950s. Like, yep, that's none of that is true, man. Like, it's
all marketing.
And for me, I'm better at this than I ever was now. Mm-hmm. Now, not last year, not like 10 years ago, 20 years ago. I mean, I am lucky enough, I guess, that I found out my final form for music. It just happened to be at 36, where it's like, oh, I've been messing up all these years. Okay, right on. Well, I'm doing it now. And I think there's something to be said. I first of all, I hate the reunion industrial complex where just bands don't ever go away. You know what I mean? Where they're just like, this, oh, they're back again. Oh, did they go away? I hadn't noticed. Yeah. You know, and that is not something that I particularly enjoy. But sometimes you get situations like with McCluskey, where you have a band that just ate it. They ate dirt like the entire time that they were around. They had like a rough go of it. And they in the U.S. didn't really care. And then now, since they've been gone, the records, which are fantastic, have grown in stature. And there's this whole other generation of people that never got to see the band, that didn't know the songs. And so they get to go back, be the best version of the band, and play these songs and have them live again for like an audience that more or less didn't exist when they were around first time as a band. And that's wonderful. I'm never going to be mad about that. But the idea that somehow that, you know, music is like a young person's game. Okay, well, I don't understand. Like, I just don't respect or appreciate that at all. Like, because I think there's plenty of situations where that is true. Mm. But again, I'm someone that I made plenty of records, right? Like, and toured plenty and did all that stuff, and somehow got the best dad I've ever been at 36, which is sort of like, okay, Bukowski started writing books when he was 35. You know, other than that, there's no stories for late period success because it's part of a entertainment model that fetishizes youth.
Yes.
And obsesses on youth and basically wants everyone to turn into consumers. And so they can sell you stuff. Probably that Bengay you're talking about earlier.
Well, look. I'm 46.
And yeah, me too. We're the same age.
This is much more successful than any music venture I've ever done,
which is wonderful.
You know, it's also gone on to help the music ventures that I've done being more successful. Sure. So no. I yeah. Another record that came out in 79 is the B-52 self-titled.
What a awesome and honestly bizarre record. Yes.
Rock, like, Lobster's on that record.
Dude, Rock Lobster is like non-Euclidean geometry for song structure. And people, folks that don't write songs maybe won't notice this, but like, it is a weird song. Like, just how it's structured, there's parts that just like, it does this cool thing, never repeats, and then it comes on this other cool thing, and then it goes over here. And it's like how I used to write stuff in Replicator, where it's like, what is, like when I had to relearn some of the songs, like, what the Sam Hill was I thinking when I wrote this? Like, was it getting paid by the part? Like, what's happening here? not to discount B-52s though, but also you have one of the weirdest vocalists in cool, we'll talk about that in a second, in rock music with Fred Schneider.
Yes.
Fred Schneider. Yes. Amazing. And Kay Pearson, who is just a god-tier level, like, just, you know, could be like a Motown singer or something along those lines. Like, everything about them was strange and cool and weird, and they were kind of a shorthand that later got reduced into talking about quote unquote new wave for people to be weird, you know, for like, if you imagine like living in a small town back then, right, like being a little older than we were maybe,
yeah,
and you see the B-52s on Saturday Night Live or whatever, and you're like, I don't know what's happening, but this is pretty cool. You know,
for me, early punk music, for some reason, a lot of those groups were getting thrown into, like, Talking Heads and B-52s were all getting thrown into the moniker of punk. right. until they really start subgenreing it with new wave and all that other bullshit.
Which that's some real record store stuff. I mean, like,
yes,
yes. say that's a former record store employee that like most of that doesn't matter. Like, okay.
But that's what I thought punk was. Like, you could just be yeah. free to it's do what to you wanted to do.
Right, but you know, you weren't thinking of Pennywise.
You know, you didn't have to have a mohawk. You could have a beehive hairdo and yeah. dress like it's you know pre-civil rights Athens, Georgia, where you're coming from.
No, yeah, they're coming out looking like they're coming out of like a John Waters movie or something. Like,
yeah, exactly.
What are these fools up to? And then they come out with the most wild music where it's like there's no bass, but there's an organ, you know, and you got yes. this guitar player that's just like doing all this crazy stuff. It was really interesting. Because when I look back at, so we mentioned XTC, right? We mentioned Gang of Four. Mm-hmm. Candio, the Cars, also mm-hmm. came out this. What people, again, they joked about calling their first record the Cars' greatest hits, which would have actually been accurate, considering like how successful that band was. But there was basically, in the world of guitar playing, there was like a new lexicon being developed at that mm-hmm. time. That was, people were upending the arena rock style excess and just doing cool stuff. I mean, Wire's getting called out in the comments. Wire's a perfect example, right? There was like a minimalism and economy of motion, but also like people just throwing the rule book out. Machine Gun Etiquette by The Damned, one of my favorite punk records yeah. of all time. I went on a show specifically to talk about the record because that record is a favorite of mine. That came out in 79, and that one's got like Alice Cooper style bombast, but it's like complete propulsive. You know, it was, you know, people sometimes say like my vocals sound like Danzig. I tried to find the compliment in that, but I'm more like Dave Vanian, dude, if anything. But
look, we all think we sound like something. You know, it's like that meme. It's like the meme where you think you look like Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
And then the other picture is Uncle Fester.
Akira said the guy from The Cult, Ian
Ashbury.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, oh, cool, you know. I'm
someone compared you to Ian Ashbury.
Yeah, yeah.
I take that
mutual friend. No, I took the compliment as intended. Absolutely. Teenage Jesus and the Jerks, self-titled, the emergence of the No Wave movement. Much love to you, Jason and Conan from Denver. Go Broncos, go Nuggets. Peace and love. Peace and love. Ayatollah of Kraut Rock and Rolla. Fantastic. No notes on that.
Super chat.
Teenage Jesus and the Jerks, Lydia Lunch. Yeah. And that's deeper down the train. That's when a lot of the weirdos, it became clear that there was a mersh element to the what was becoming known as New Wave, right? So then people went deeper with it. And so that's where the No Wave movement, especially in New York, happened, where Sonic Youth came from that yeah. as well. That's probably like the biggest success story. James Chance. The Contortions, all of these bands that were just like, well, we're gonna make the alternative to alternative. You know, you mentioned that wasn't even a term yet, but basically, like, no, we're gonna go deeper on this. We're gonna go. Swans is a great example. I just had Norm Westbrook of Swans on the show, by the way.
Oh, how was that?
Fantastic. He's one, and to me, one of the great weirdo guitar players, right? Mm-hmm. And like, when you have Gerard in your band, like you're. He's gonna take up all the air in the room, so to speak. but
sure, he really was happy to be there by himself.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. No, he's really fantastic fella. And Swans are, there's a documentary about them, but I, yeah, it's one of those things I wonder. I feel like a lot of people, more people, should watch them because like nerds know, mm-hmm. right? But like, I count myself amongst them. But it's. Their story is an interesting one because when people do know them, they know about the more recent stuff, which is, I don't want to say it's mellower, but I mean, that was an impressive band. That band was like a steamroller, like just crushing things in the street for the longest time and like genuinely terrifying, you know.
But is that another case of if you stay around long enough, you can achieve a certain amount of commercial success?
Yeah, I mean, they carved out an audience, you know, and they carved, and then they went away and carved out a different sort of audience.
Yeah, very different audience. Yeah,
that, like, again, people were like not even like more aware of the early days to that. So I mean, that's interesting. And we're taking in framework for rock music. You mentioned Highway to Hell, which is one of the biggest rock albums of all time until
they release the follow-up.
The next one
with Back in Black
with a new singer. Which
who
which,
does that? Oh, sorry, Strom says The Incredible Disco Man, the best album of 1979.
What is that? Incredible Disco Man.
Maybe the Donald Duck record.
Mm-hmm. Donald Disco Duck.
No, but yeah, who reference. What band does that? Maybe Van Halen. Sales wise.
Yeah. I mean,
I can't think of another band that changes a front person.
Was that James Brown? Real? Really?
What?
About James the original Disco Man? Is that what he said?
James Brown? That's a James Brown record?
James Brown has a disco record.
Like, if James Brown was releasing the records in 1979, that's... Oh, was that when he was on, like, all those breakbeats that people sampled?
Yeah, I think... Yeah. So, what's funny is, like, imagine having a career so all-encompassing and artistically fulfilling that people just, like, casually forget eras of your work. Like David Bowie, right? He had some cornball albums, but nobody remembers that stuff, you know? Like, everyone's like, oh, man, no, it's, Berlin Trilogy and, like, Ziggy Stardust. Yeah, I love all that stuff, too.
You know who we haven't named, Conan? Gary Newman.
Gary Newman, who's still out, still going, and kind of buddied up with all the industrial mans now. And,
yeah.
Like, he's on that circuit, which is fascinating because, yeah, Two Boy Army first, then Gary Newman solo, and... Yeah, weird. Like a weird, like it's weird that Cars was a hit, you know, because it's a cool tune, but that was a huge hit, and it was like real early on.
Mm-hmm. MTV, and, can we give MTV its props? This is 79 is before MTV hits in 81, but groups used to do these kind of commercial videos for their label,
right?
For singles, so there was always videos being made. That's why you can see like Aerosmith videos from 77.
Right, because they were like promotional films, right? They were there, and we just missed for this year Are We Not Men, We Are Devo, which of course they were they were one that really took advantage of the form to incredible success a year later on the Freedom of Choice record, which of course with the ubiquitous Whip It, which is how most people still only know the band now. But so real quick, yeah, the AC/DC Highway to Hell and beginning Back in Black. There's no story I can think of that like we have that level of success where you change up something, an iconic singer who dies, of course. I mean, just to put it out there, with a different singer and the band becomes more successful.
Insane.
Crazy. It's insane. And a lot of people hate on Back in Black that are Bon Scott.
You're
idiots.
How can you hate on that record?
People that like being contrarian.
First of all, they're all the same record. So
the Young Brothers would be the first one to bring that up, right? It's like, but yeah, but you got that going on. You know, Birthday Party is going on, getting back into that post-punk pop
the
group.
The Germs released their record.
Germs, man. Yeah, and. You have a lot happening on both sides of things. Like you got Dynasty by Kiss, right, coming out, and you also have The Clash, right? I mean, like, people forget like The Clash is going to be one of these fakakta biopics, I'm sure. But London Calling comes out in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea of there being like an album that sprawling, and it was their third record, that was ostensibly a punk rock record, right? It was mind blowing, and
greatest album cover of all time?
It has to be.
It's got
to
be
It's in the conversation. I mean, it's so good.
It's up there. It's so good. Name me a better album cover. For me, Kiss Alive.
Kiss Alive's very
that's
good.
That's a great cover.
Yeah, yeah.
London Calling. I know people are like, well, that's dead rock. I don't give a fuck. It wasn't at one point in time, douchebag. Everything becomes old people music, you dumbass.
I mean,
I never understood how people like trying to shit on you. Like, oh,
it doesn't sound dangerous now because it's not 1979.
Yeah, you know, like
that stuff was like from Mars back then. And but you also have people innovating too. Neil Young does "Rust Never Sleeps," 1979. That was a big record, but that was like a bizarre record, even for Neil. That he would get more weird. I mean, he did his synth record at one point, but like,
yes, he did.
And he did "Everybody's Rockin'" because he did that synth record, and the record label was like, "Oh, yeah, it's good. We just thought there'd be some rock songs." Like, "Oh, you want rock songs? Fine." And he made an album I kid you not, Jason. He made an album called Everybody's Rockin' that was all 1950s rock and roll, right? That was his response to that. So it's like the biggest, like, that's Neil Young for you. He's that much on the piss take of like, no, I'm going to make, you want rock songs? I'll give you some goddamn rock songs. Here you go, douchebag. And like, he went out in like these 1950s suits. I know I'm going to talk. And banged out these rock and roll songs. Everybody's Rockin' was the name of the
that
record.
Was the one where he had like a lot of the MTV videos and stuff.
Yeah, right?
I remember that.
It's not bad too, but it's just, it's such a Neil Young thing to do. So what why I'm bringing that up is that that's an artist that continued to innovate and change. Sparks, number one in heaven. I'm a huge Sparks fan, as anybody knows who knows me. They worked with JoJo Moroder. But rather than just make a disco record, they made this like bent, warped, synth pop, like kind of masterpiece that honestly, there's in bands that owe their career to that record. And they chose not to be in the Sparks documentary. that's the nicest thing that I'll say about that. But I played that after we saw the documentary, I played it for Lindsay because she wanted to hear some of it. And she's like, oh my God. And I was like, yep. It's like this. He's like, what year has come out? 1979. Oh my God. It's like, yep. So
Prince's self-titled record is 1979.
Is it really? Wow. See, it's funny because we think of him as like 80s, right? But like,
he takes over the 80s. But you know, I Want to Be Your Lover.
Sure.
That's the first song off that record.
Didn't Stevie do a record too that year? Was a
who?
Secret Life of Plants, Stevie Wonder. I think he did a record as well.
Let's see. Stevie Wonder is one of those people that has a gajillion records.
Yeah.
And you just buy the greatest hits. And then if you actually like dig into the albums, you're like, oh.
Yeah.
I only got Greatest Hits Volume 7. I didn't realize.
More greatest hits.
Stevie Wonder is also one of those guys that I really like. I can't remember who said it. Maybe it was Questlove. Ugh. But Stevie Wonder has to be little Stevie Wonder for all those years.
That's right, because he came up in the...
Before you get to Inner Vision Stevie Wonder.
Yeah, man.
And Songs in the Key of Life Stevie
little
Wonder.
Little Stevie Wonder.
Can anyone do that now on that same level where you're going to release these just deep... You're writing and producing at this point. You don't have to have a team of people in there to help you do what you need to do.
There's no such thing as artist development anymore. You have to...
No.
You have to have a hit immediately or it's over. Like it's as far as on that level.
Yeah.
So I don't know why that brought it to mind, but John Lydon, the second PIL record, Metal Box.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, man. Talk about someone with like, I mean, cause he was Sex Pistols, right? I mean, it was ubiquitous. And then he decided that he wanted to do something different. No one wanted that. But like but like Keith Levine, some of that guitar stuff he did, especially on the first record, but also on the second, Jaw Wobbles on bass. And I was lucky enough, it's been a while, but I had Martin Atkins on the show, my show on Protonic Reversal.
I saw that. Yeah.
And he was like super cool to talk about all that stuff. But like PIL was just one of those bands that would go wildly ahead of their time. And all of the stuff that they did is sort of mainstream now. So it doesn't necessarily sound as daring and crazy now as it does. But like, my God, man, that and people just wanted more Sex Pistols stuff. We want you to do the thing we like. Why don't you do the thing we like? Why are you doing this other stuff we don't like?
that definitely happens when you're a band that iconic for our
it is.
I for mean, our record.
Talk to Radiohead, you know, like every time they do anything, everyone's like, why don't you just make another Radiohead record? And it's like, man, they probably made too many anyway.
Well, I'm glad they called it quits.
Exactly. Me too.
It's on a great note. I don't know. I like, you're not the biggest. I think I'm a bigger Radiohead fan than you, which definitely defies the stereotype about white guys
that love Radiohead. Wait, then the white guy?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I dig him. I mean, Benz is great. Okay, Computer's great. Kid A, Amnesiac. You know, that whole...
It's in Rainbows for me.
Yeah, I like In Rainbows. Okay. It's pretty good. I don't think about it that often, but like...
Because you're a happy man, and I'm like depressed. You have a wife and cats and all this shit. Like, you're touring. I'm just sitting here sad and alone, you know.
Oh.
playing like the same Radiohead songs over and over again.
Fitter, why can I write happier. Something so depressing too?
Led Zeppelin, Into the Outdoor, their swan song. If you
that's know. Right, that's right. Which that's the one. Was the
I'll tell you the
ocean on there? Into the Outdoor. I'm trying to remember. I had no idea.
Came out right before my birthday, August.
The one's got the weird bar on the cover that was in the yeah. that hypnosis.
In the evening, Southbound Suarez.
Fool in the Rain. Okay.
Fool in the Rain.
Oh, yeah. All of my love. All of
my love.
Yeah, yeah.
That's is that kind of the like. Only song from that record that's really like, eh?
Yeah. That's not my favorite Led Zeppelin record, but, you know.
No.
Probably.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not even close.
I mean, All My Love is better than I'm in the mood for a melody. I'm in the mood, which is like, my man, I am not in the mood for that melody. Hell
which
no.
one is with Black Dog and Stairway to Heaven? Three? Four.
That might be four.
Is it four? That's the shit for me.
Oh, yeah, man. That's
oof. Tough.
I mean, I even like Physical Graffiti. Like, you know, Custard Pie has The Holy. I mean, that's good stuff on there.
But, yeah. Again, back to like greatest runs by bands, Police. You still Police.
If you want to do a fun game with the Police, the band. Do not suggest playing fun games with actual
with law
cops.
Enforcement, please do not
get your ass killed. you can watch all their videos in reverse order. And you can watch them get to like each other.
That's so fucked up.
I've done it a couple times. It's kind of a trip, man. Because like by the end of it, it's like they look like they're filming this video in like different studios in different cities.
Oh yeah.
they could be further.
You
away.
Watched that documentary, right? Where they're on tour.
Yeah.
So I watched the interview with Stuart Copeland and Rick Bedio. Did you watch that?
No.
He interviewed each member of the Police individually.
Okay.
And they all are pretty cool with each other now because, you know, they had that reunion tour.
Yeah, yeah. It seemed like
ridiculous amounts of money.
Yeah.
Also, what's really interesting about this time in music is you will get a budget to record a record.
Right.
And you could record a record wherever the hell you wanted to record a record.
I mean, I was born in the wrong era, man. I would murder that if
you're not getting a budget to record a record.
Hell no.
Everyone's recording a record in their house.
Yeah.
Or you're going to the producer's house to record a record.
I mean, we're atypical because we actually go, it's not a huge studio, but we go into the studio to do it. But it's like the idea of that being even paid for, let alone like, oh yeah, why don't you go rent a castle? And go set up some equipment in the castle.
But imagine taking Toshi to Malibu, where Rick Rubin's got his spot.
Yeah.
And hold up there for 3 months.
I'm ready. Let's go.
And you guys don't even have drug problems.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, too, is that because you mentioned, and, you know, rocking while getting older or whatever. I've never been, for me, the music is the reward, right? Like, I mean, I grew up around drugs. Like, my parents are doing all the drugs, and they had no allure of rebellion to me whatsoever. Mm. So when I see Tales of Rock and Roll Excess, I usually get annoyed. So I'm like, wow, man, they're wasting all this money. But like, you can get high in your own time. Like, Jesus Christ, like, make a record, dudes. It's usually dudes, frankly.
Imagine being able to, you know, sometimes I see some of these behind the scenes things are making of a record and they're, you know, what was Stuart Copeland saying? Yeah, we recorded the Regatta de Blanc in Montserrat.
Exactly. I was like, oh my God, dude. Well,
okay, that sounds cool.
But I think you also have to realize, too, when you're putting it in context, that there just weren't as many studios then. And there was like the preponderance in the 80s into the 90s, there was like just more studios, right? And then now there's less because you can just record
it's not
at
financially
home.
Liable,
yeah, it's not you have to have a niche to have a working studio open. You have to be a Rancho de la Luna or something like that. Because even Tiny Telephone finally like called it a day, which kind of blows my mind. But
that's crazy.
Yeah. But then
is Hyde Street still open in San Francisco?
You know, I don't know. Is that hold on. So this can be really compelling for people.
I was in San Francisco last week and I was actually kind of looking for it because I remember it was kind of one of those.
You just missed our show, man. Like that. You just
I did. I missed you both. I didn't get a chance to drive up to see you, but Ben told me he saw you. He said it was Podcaster Central at your show.
Yeah. I busted his balls. I said, cause he came in late. And so yeah. It was like, oh yeah, most bands have mosh pits. We have a podcast breakout. Called out that man because he was right there with Dan from the internet. Chris Wade from Chapo was right there. I was like, look at these men. Give them one of those podcast microphones and some theme music and let's get going.
I was actually trying to prepare myself if you fucked with me again to try to bring me on stage to play the last song.
Oh yeah. Really? I mean, you're,
if you would have fucked with me again, I would have been up there like, okay, motherfucker.
It's Chesapeake Ripper. Let's roll. Yeah.
And I was going to just fuck with you and do the vocals too. So I was like, you know, let me get prepared for this son of a bitch.
Open invite, dude.
If he does that to me one more time, dude, comfy clothes.
For those that don't stay up on the banal minutia of the, I guess the This Is Revolution cinematic universe, Jason Miles, host of this show, has indeed played in Code Neutron, The Secret Friends.
And cross state lines with you, bro.
Yeah, absolutely. He's been on tour with us, so I fairly regularly ask if he wants to do stuff. He's like, man, I'm good. I'm not looking to move those cabinets. I'm not looking to be stuck in a van, you know. Which I get it, but if
I could be stuck in a van, I would love to be stuck in a van with you guys. I would love to talk music with you guys.
Yeah, sounds like this show.
I would not love to load in and out.
Yeah, it's well,
that's
I
all. That's
I don't love thing. That either.
That's the only thing, you know. I told you when I saw you in San Francisco, I saw those dead cases all over the floor. I was like, oh man, you gotta move that shit.
Because sometimes you're thinking, hey, I miss this, and you're like, oh, I don't miss it that much.
No, I know. Well, I mean, you finally got to a point where most places you're gonna play is gonna have a green room.
Yeah, you
that's
know,
a huge difference.
Man, some of them are like the loose suggestion of a green room. Freaking one at. I'm not going to mention which venue. One of the venues, great venue. The green room looked like a European squat. I'm like, what is happening here? You're in a major city.
You know what's real funny? Together? Have you ever? I know you haven't done as much international touring, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
You have to really get to that like arena level to find bathrooms that aren't disgusting.
Man, that's all I'm asking. I need a place to change and I need a place to take a dump. Those are the two things that I need. And like, I don't care about, you know,
you can get comfortable.
A lot of stuff.
There was a place in Brazil we played. I don't know what part of Brazil this was. I can't remember the city, but I remember that there was no toilet seats.
Oh, no, no, honey, no. God damn, man.
I will never forget because I remember that we would see people walking around. They had like toilet seats on their backpacks. And we're like, where the fuck part of Brazil are we in?
That is super strange.
And then I was like, I was bitching to Alex. I was like, dude, there's no toilet seat.
That is rough. That is rough on a different. I mean. Look, a lot of times when you're touring, you got to get in. That's one of the reasons why, like, some venues, when it's run by someone who has toured or does tour, it's always like, oh, thank you.
There's no
leather curtain or something for the shitter.
And they'll have like a shower.
Yeah. Oh my god.
So
the
nice.
Best. First time I ever played a venue and it had a shower and like washer and dryer. I'm like, I feel like I'm an emperor right now. This is amazing.
Wait, what place was that had a washer dryer in it?
Funny people. Well, Bottom Hill did for a long time, but recently Echoplex did. I did my laundry.
Oh, Echoplex had a different.
Yeah, it was great. I feel like there's at least one anytime we do a big tour. I'm always like, yes.
Wait a minute, you have to read this.
God. I was sitting here talking to David Yao from the Jesus Lizard, not to name drop, who was at our show. And I was just talking about just like how great it is to play a place that has a washer and dryer. And we were just like kind of like bonding about like, oh yeah, man. Like, because the thing is, though, because those men toured like crazy for like years and years. So that's the kind of stuff we talk about. People think it's like groupies and cocaine, man. No, we're talking about doing our laundry.
No, we came up in the wrong era for that
shit. Yeah, right.
it's a bunch of dudes in the audience, and there, and if there is any female, if you're like heterosexual, it's married, but you know, no. The bottom line is just now.
We have a pretty our crowd, such as it is fairly co-ed. It's not like some of these, like, you know, go to a stoner rock show. It's like just beards and bellies, man.
Oh yeah, all the dudes look the same.
Oh, is that there's a dude with a beard and a beer belly, and here's a more different dude with a beard and a beer belly. Peace and love.
Does Conan do land acknowledgments at his show, and will Jason partake? That is going to be a double no.
I'm not sure if I understand the reference, but
land acknowledgement where you acknowledge that you're playing on native land. You name the tribe of the land that you're playing on.
Dude.
And then you stop after, then you go, all right, that's enough. On with the show.
Look. Look, I'm a busy man. I'm sorry. Like, peace and love, but I man, that sounds exhausting.
Kushlick says we need a bandwidth acknowledgement.
Occupied Call of Duty gamer program. Fantastic. Getting us back on track. Wire 154. I mentioned them very briefly.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. I'm literally staring at that album cover right now, which is a very late 70s, I would say even almost 80s album cover.
Right. And that's kind of went a little goth on that one. You know, Chairs Missing is my jam. But they did outrun, it was Pink Flag, Chairs Missing, 154, where it's like genre defying records, like just in rapid succession. And it's crazy that 79, you know, they're in their original run, they were kind of starting to wind down, and there's a whole regrettable 80s set of records as well. But it's again, it is straight proto goth Cure. I mean, because the Cure themselves are doing Three Imaginary Boys, which I love, but as I mentioned earlier, that's more or less a weird rock record. That's like the post-punk record, right? And then because they were Robert Smith was getting messed with, he basically became the Robert Smith that we know, control enthusiast, and developed his sound. I shouldn't say like it's a bad thing. Like, look at the thing with was it Ticketmaster, right? Or Live Nation? What was it? All these corporations.
Live Nation, the whole thing about the fees.
Good for him, man. Because he's using his platform. He's using his platform for good. And also, man, people clowning on that man because he's gained weight. Like, how old is he? Like, you want him to look like the hot, 60s. Pretty like goth boy, like in his 20s? Dude, this man is a senior citizen.
Yeah, he's got an AARP card. He's getting discounts at Denny's. Like, don't get it twisted.
Cut him some slack, you know, and whatever. Oh, he gained weight. Oh, well, he's happy. So, like, you know, maybe we can give it to him. Jesus Christ. You're so freaking shallow.
Donna Summer has Bad Girls.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Massive record.
Diana Ross has that record too.
Diana Ross has, hold on, The Specials has their self-titled. Mm-hmm. I'm pulling it up right now. Who's singing in Black Flag in 79? Which singer is that?
Ooh, that might still be Keith Morris.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, because that's gonna be real early on for them.
Is it Nervous Breakdown, Keith Morris?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, let's see. So they were. Let's see, Panic was till like 78. So it probably would have been Keith Morris. I think so.
Motorhead
released. I should freaking know this. I've had like these. I've been multiple people from that band on the show. But
Ayatollah says Keith Morris. I believe you.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right. And which is crazy because you think about like 154 by Wire and like the early Black Flag stuff coming out. And it's like it seems like that would be, they're separated by months, right? Instead of like years. Like it seems like because Black Flag, love or malo them, beget hardcore, and the sort of like the rules for punk rock that came into place that kind of killed that spirit of having bands like the B-52s and Talking Heads and whatever, you know, that like, no, it sounds like this. This is what we're doing. And it's not just Southern California. It's not even just LA. It was mostly like Orange County, and a few bands. And What Hast Thou Wrought? Because that's what we got stuck on for literal years. I know, like, a lot of people listening to the show probably don't give a damn about hardcore, punk rock, whatever, etc. But if you like Pylon, just get some mention in the comments. If you like those weird, nervy post-punk records, which I do, I love that stuff. Birthday mm-hmm. Party is one of my favorite bands of all time. You know, Wire, Gang of Four keeps getting mentioned by me. and all of these kind of stranger sort of like, there's no rule book. We're just going to run wild with it. Mm-hmm. This is, I mean, this is 79 is like ground zero for that. And if we were both busy, you know, maybe walking. Babies. And all that stuff was long over the time we were.
Yeah. By the time we're like cognizant of, right. of music, that's it. Yeah. I mean, that's what I write about. I think those guys from that scene took what they saw from the Sex Pistols as a blueprint. Right. You can actually say the dance. Like most of those UK bands had a look because they all come from, what is his name? Malcolm McLaren, Vivian West. You know that?
Yeah,
that,
they sort of.
They were stylized.
Crafting an image that. Would the press would pay attention to
that, right? Was truly countercultural to the moment.
But then you also have like Dave Vanian like ran around like a vampire too, like which is like literally dressing like a vampire, like Dracula.
Bela Lugosi's Dead comes out in 79.
Yeah, oh, that's right, Bauhaus. Sure, man.
You know,
yeah.
As I'm wearing a Christian death shirt, I'm a Bauhaus fan.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that creepy. What do you call it? Vampire castle music.
Exactly. It sounds like a vampire castle.
Because I think I'm a bigger horror fan than you.
I love good horror, but I guess I'm a horror aesthete, and I think most modern horror is whack. Like just it's either bad, like bad plots, mm-hmm. just torture porn, ripping off something. Like look, man, like that everyone's running around like saying how great this X movie was. I like this better. One's called Texas Chainsaw Massacre, man. Like are you kidding
oh,
me?
I haven't seen. Is that what it is? It's like one of those ripoffs. Or Omar.
It's not like a direct ripoff, but so my favorite horror movies are ones that kind of do something different, right? Like, I mean, I thought Barbarian was great. Barbarian was awesome. I thought Talk to Me was pretty good. I do like horror movies as a genre. I don't make excuses for horror movies. Like a true horror fan will sit around and make excuses. Well, this one's okay because it had some good kills. Really? Because it's a trash movie for trash.
Oh, people. I won't say that at all.
No, I'm not going to say who I'm talking about, but I know people.
That oh, okay. I do not talk like that.
No. But I've seen so many horror movies.
I watched a John Cassavetes fucking weird ass horror movie at 3 o'clock this morning.
Oh wow.
That I found on YouTube.
I wasn't even familiar that was a thing. Is it any good?
Oh, dude, I've watched. Right now, I'm getting most of my horror through YouTube, and it is all trash. And I love every minute of it.
Well, and that's I guess my thing with it is that I'll watch it if it's gonna be good. Like Hereditary, right? I loved Hereditary.
Oh yeah, you're watching. Look, dude, I don't care about any of that shit. Because when I, again, growing up,
yeah,
I sat in front of I had like two channels because the cable was rolling, right? Yeah. And right. I think we had Cinemax for a while, right?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe if you like look just right and turn your head over here, you might see.
Oh, we had that. And then we actually had like this, I don't know, my mom's boyfriend at the time like took it from somewhere. And right. when you could do that, right?
Right, right.
And
my dad paid off the cable guy, you know.
One of those things like yeah. Where'd the TV go? Shut up, you know. But I would sit in front of the TV,
yeah,
and whatever came on is what I had to watch. So if I was gonna watch I wanted to watch like Friday the 13th part 55, you know, I had to sit through all this other stuff I had never heard of before. I had to watch like Street Trash,
oh my god,
and all this other stuff I had never heard of before to get there. And I was like, and then watching all that crap, I was like, hey, this crap ain't bad,
right?
I you know, so that's when I see something on YouTube like that, I'm like, you know, I'm gonna sit here and I'll literally throw the remote
basket case.
Oh, that's a basket case.
That's what that was, a Malignant.
Bad,
it was like,
Seed.
I call Malignant a hot girl basket case.
That's what I heard. It's like a ripoff of that.
It is. Like, but if you've never seen Basket Case, you're like, oh, it's so original. I'm like, yo, this is Basket Case, man. Like, it's just way better production effects with a hot chick. Sorry.
That's whack. Like, look, the thing that I mildly dig, and I don't know how much I don't want to say mildly, I'll take it back.
Malignant.
The thing that I find curious about this moment now is no one's trying to make franchise films. And you and I grew up in the era of everyone's trying to find a franchise character. Everyone yes. wants Freddy.
Yeah.
Everyone wants Jason.
They tried Halloween. To do it with freaking Pumpkinhead, man.
That just, like, was not it.
Man, one of those was fine. But like sequels and stuff. That's something, and then they like oh, the when the strobe light comes on, get your ass out of there. Pumpkinhead's coming. Where do you think the strobe light's coming from?
I didn't really dig Pumpkinhead.
Nah, Pumpkinhead was.
it definitely terrified me to go to West Virginia, but
well, I mean, look, that's
then I went to that. West Virginia and it was totally fine. I was like, Pumpkinhead ain't here.
Yeah, exactly. If you see a store boy, better haul ass back.
No,
but van.
Racism is. No, that didn't happen.
John in the comments, can't wait for the new Toxic Avenger. I believe David Yao is in that.
I'm scared of the new Toxic Avenger, to be honest with you.
Yeah, because I think when he was on my show.
He talked about
he was talking about that.
Don't mess with. Look, we're talking about 1979 music as well. So yeah. Halloween soundtrack is on here.
Oh,
dude.
All-timer. Yeah. Dude. I mean, amazing. Like John Carpenter is like, and I love that he was just, this, you know, he made all these iconic soundtracks to his movies. It was largely because he just, well, I don't want to hire somebody. I can do that myself.
I'm glad he did.
Yeah. Tony went and saw him like do a show. Like he like
it's him and his son, right?
Yeah,
dude. Carpenter made was it? I like The Thing. The score on The Thing is great.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
What other score did he do? Did he do those scores for those weird
Big Trouble in Little China?
Oh fuck.
Yeah, I mean he's freaking.
We could do it. We could look. If you want to do a movie night extravaganza show, we could talk about the Carpenter 90s years for the movies that no one talks about.
Oh, like really vampires enjoy. And.
No, I'm talking the trilogy he has of.
I've seen all of them.
I'm forgetting the names of the movies now. Remember, he made those three movies in the early 90s.
I do. Yeah, I saw them all because I.
Sutter Kane was the character. Was the
In the Mouth of Madness. I love the Mouth of Madness.
Does he do? Does he do Lord of Illusion?
No, but I think you're thinking of God. Hold on a second. Let me just look.
Someone said John Carpenter.
Oh, all right. So In the Mouth of Madness, 94. Village of the Damned. Then he goes back to Escape from New York with Escape from L.A. Vampires is 98. So I was right about.
No. So what?
Prince
does...
of Darkness. Are you thinking of
Prince of Darkness?
That's 80s.
Prince of Darkness.
It is Big Trouble in Little China, then Prince of Darkness, then They Live.
And then after They Live, he does?
Memoirs of an Invisible Man. But then after that's In the Mouth of Madness.
And then there's another one after In the Mouth of Madness.
Village of the Damned.
You guessed the trilogy then.
And then, yeah, Escape from LA. Vampires. Everybody forgets about Vampires. That movie is jacked up. James Woods.
I can't take James Woods.
Man, he is an a-hole in that movie. Dude, that character sucks, man. It's like one of those things where it's like, are we supposed to be rooting for this dude? Because he blows. He's horrible.
James Woods, dude.
Daniel, one of the lesser Baldwins is in there. Daniel Baldwin. Cheryl Lee's in that. And she got done dirty in that movie, but she's naked like a lot.
But I'll watch it.
I convinced you.
before we open up the phone lines, some records we haven't mentioned. Joe Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
I like Joe Jackson.
Joe Jackson's good. I definitely had a chip on my shoulder. Power pop, I guess.
You know what that is?
Yeah. I think.
Stepping out. I fucking love Stepping Out.
Yeah.
I don't want to call it. Is it pop, though? Is it kind of standards-y almost?
Yeah.
Like edgy Michael Bublé. What do you call him?
That's what. So Look Sharp is the one. Is She Really Going Out With Him is on, right?
Oof.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I kind of always call the power pop, and I guess I don't know that's come to mean something a little different. But oh yeah, One More Time. That's that one.
Crass.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Feeding of the 5,000 comes out.
Crass and Clash, same year.
Soothing the Banshees. If no one mentioned Soothing the Banshees yet.
I'm surprised with all the talk of the Cure. I'm shocked we didn't, but yeah, that's a Thin Lizzy Black Rose, I think, is that year too. Which we invoked Van Halen, invoked AC/DC, so we got
dude, at the end of the year, fucking Christopher Cross.
Oh.
Woo! That's my shit. Sailing, takes me away.
There it is, everybody. There it is. Your host. Unknown Pleasures. Have we not shot? We shot it all this spooky.
We said Unknown Pleasures.
But have we not talked about it though? I mean, Joy Division. Think about a band that, you know, obviously had a horrific end, but every kid, man, they go through, you know, they get that Unknown Pleasures record and, you know, flap the cape around their face. You know, it's like every year. It's like one of those all-timers. You know, she's lost control. Oh, I'm so edgy, you know. I love all that stuff, by the way. But I mean, come on.
But why don't they do that with Christopher Cross is the question. That's the question. You're not asking the right fucking question.
Because Ian Curtis didn't stick around long enough to sully his legacy. I mean, to put it bluntly. Like, I love New Order. I think New Order is great. But it's the vibes are way different, obviously.
Yes.
The Fall released two albums in 79. They're both very great. Live of the Witch Trials and Dragnet. Throw in some love for The Fall. I love The Fall. Fall's great.
When you can release two albums in 1 year.
That man.
That's a whole different. Again, that's a whole different time, man.
Dude, but can I tell you? Like, I'm no Marky Smith.
Okay.
And we can all be thankful for that. but if I was in a situation where there was a demand to do that and or resources to do that, absolutely. I love that. Like Creedence Clearwater Revival, they did that same thing. All those banging records, they were all like, boom, record, next year, boom, record, next year, boom, record. And it was that short period of time, right? Wire, like we keep invoking Wire. Like all those records are like within about a year of each other. It's nuts. Like I like that kind of stuff. And I think the idea now is you make a record and, you know, if it's a hit, then like it's just like people just want to see that record for forever because people now are trained to acknowledge and appreciate things that they already know or that are familiar rather than all the stuff we're mentioning are sort of like stuff that pushed things, even like the Donna Summer record, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not what it inspired isn't really my jam, but it's hard to argue against the influence. I mean, Jesus, like it's like that, and that was like her seventh record or something too. It wasn't like a debut. She'd been around kicking for like forever, you know? And I think she was the first female artist to hit number one. I think so. That seems right.
I mean, that's the number one record of that year is Donna Summer, either her or the Beatles.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, huge.
Bee Gees. Absolutely. I said the Beatles, Bee Gees. I meant the Bee Gees.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Who again, Bee Gees had a whole blue-eyed soul career before hitting with the Saturday Night Fever stuff. Like
Night Fever.
Which is great. But like they like, you know, I started to choke that started the whole, which most people know from the Faith No More cover, which is rules. But like Bee Gees, where they like, if you listen to those early Bee Gees record before they went disco, you'd be like, wow, this band's good. Who is this? I'm like, it's the Bee Gees.
It's the Bee Gees. Yeah.
Fuck out of here. Really?
I thought the Bee Gees were the Beatles for the longest time. Remember they did the Sgt. Pepper movie that came on TV all the time?
Right. Which they do not, that Bee Gees documentary, which I can recommend. It's worth watching. They skip, that's in there for like maybe like 5 seconds. Clearly somebody did not want to talk about it.
Because I thought the Bee Gees were superheroes.
Totally. And like, it was a big deal. And they just like, clearly someone's like, yeah, we're not going to let this documentary come out if you focus too much on that whack stuff. And it's like, no.
Oh, I'm sure it's embarrassing for them. But for me, I was like, look, there's a few things that I remember as a young person growing up. Kiss terrified the shit out of me.
Right. Which sounds adorable now, but
yeah, understandable. Dude, terrified the shit out of me.
Oh, I get
and
it.
I thought the Bee Gees were literally superheroes after watching. So I used to love when that would come on TV.
And I think it's because that wasn't a hit that they kind of backed away from it. I think it's the reason why. By the way, did we mention Blondie?
We did it early on. Blondie, yeah, you'd say Blondie.
Eat to the Beat is on there, which
Heart of Glass is on that record.
I think it actually might. Is it that one? I thought that was Parallel Lines. But Atomic's on there, which is one of my favorite songs. That one cooks, man. And Dreaming. There was a bunch of.
You know who we didn't mention? Aerosmith has Night in the Ruts.
Oh man, yeah, and Aerosmith. That's yeah.
Aerosmith, I wish I could play the music from these records that we're talking about right now.
That's the one thing I think that you miss on these shows. Well, first of all, we blast through so many of them, we wouldn't get through a song. But like, I think that. Yeah, it would be nice to have that as like a compendium, right? Like
it's on. Oh, dude, just
yeah, Night in the Ruts. Cause so you had Get Your Wings, Toys in the Attic, Rocks, all great. I'm sorry, people, they're all great. Don't we're not talking about '90s Desmond Child, Aerosmith. We're talking about when they were a real ass band. You got Draw the Line, good, and then yeah, Night in the Ruts, and it's like okay, it's like.
Wait, who's out? Let's see who's out of the band because I forgot people left the band.
Joe Perry left and came.
Is this when Joe Perry left?
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, it might be the record after that, but Night in the Ruts is not. I mean, like, I don't know why you listen to that when you can listen to Rocks or Toys in the Attic, frankly, because those ones cook.
It's not like you go see Aerosmith live and they're playing anything. You guys want to hear some Night in the Ruts?
Man, can I tell you, I saw those men and they it was great. They didn't play any of those Desmond Child, and they started off playing Combination, which I'm like, hell yeah, we're in for it.
Really?
And they played like all of like their best songs. It was an awesome show. The one thing, man, they're like, all right, we're going to do some songs from Honkin' on Bobo, which is their blues record that came out. I swear, man, it's called Honkin' on Bobo.
I know exactly.
And it's a harmonica. Is Bobo. Oh, yeah, whatever. Sure.
I know exactly the record.
Trash from the trash can. It was mind-numbingly bad, but like clearly they were having fun doing it, like they were having, that was like probably their favorite part of the set, you know, but I was like, man, I'm gonna go just walk around, I don't need to see this is embarrassing.
We're gonna do some stuff with Done with Mirrors, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's some Done with Mirrors stuff. No
man, I seriously Done with Mirrors, wow, yeah, I forgot about that one. That one's
good.
That one's pretty dire too. That's the one.
That's when they all get clean and you know they're in the studio like this the whole time.
Well, it has that Joe Perry project cover, Let the Music Do the Talking. Oh, they did. They did, and it had nothing. There was nothing good to say about it. Sorry.
Yeah. So sadly, there are some bad releases from this year. Can releases their self-titled record in 79.
R.I.P. Damo Suzuki, man.
Yeah.
Can's a band I like. And I always feel like I should listen to more, but
you have the Vitamin C song, and that was enough for you.
Vitamin C's awesome, dude. That's a fucking jam and a half, man. Especially it was in.
Let's not be those pretentious douchebags and lie and act like we fucking have deep dive into Can. Like,
oh, I definitely I've listened to their stuff, but nothing really hit me as hard as like, you know, the big song everyone knows, which is in what movie is it? Inherent Vice. It's like plays a prominent role in Inherent Vice. That song.
Thanks for remembering that film.
Yeah, I feel like everyone forgot about it. Even though it's
Paul I watched Thomas that Anderson. One. I still haven't stayed up to watch the whole thing because I always watch it at night, and I'm always like, I have to figure out how this ends.
Yeah, that's a good movie. I like it.
Yeah, real fucked up film. Lou Reed releases Bells.
Which one is that? Bells.
I'm not a big Lou Reed fan.
Yeah, I mean, so you got The Bells is his ninth solo record. God damn, that man had nine solo records before that.
Yeah, nine records. I still don't care about. I just never really gave a shit about Lou Reed. I don't know why.
I Want to Boogie With You is on it. All right.
I really want to play like 10 seconds of it so we can just like...
Really, Lou? Well, which is the one that has Walk on the Wild Side and
That's when he's with the Velvet Underground.
No.
Walk on the Wild
incorrect.
Side.
Correct. Nope. It is absolutely not. Is post Velvet Underground. It's post Loaded even. Yeah.
Marianne Faithful has a record in 79.
I think it's let's see. Okay, yeah, Marianne Faithful. Yeah. Was it Coney Island? He does have a lot of records. Who's letting this guy really so many records, man? Like, I love Lou Reed, but that's a lot of Lou Reed music. Is it Transformer, I think?
There's
Transformer, I think, is the one.
Conan, there's a review on here.
Uh-huh, what does it say?
It says, this is Lou Reed's Spinal Tap moment. Whatever diehard fans find to applaud within the storytelling, and no matter that the artist himself feels this was some of his best songwriting, the overall result is farcical. Reed abandons his own vocal identity to adopt a Cockney punk delivery on several.
Get the fuck out of here. What record is this? This is the one.
This is the Bell. Look,
I ostensibly like Lou Reed, but that means I like three or four songs of his, and I admire Metal Machine music and never want to listen to it. You know what I mean?
Can you just say, like, nah, I dig a few cuts. I don't have to say I like him.
Oh, I think he's a horrific human being. to a lot of people,
right?
And I think he's mad overrated. I do like him though. It's just that, like, I don't want to listen to it, you know.
Like, what was Metallica's draw to be like, let's make a whole record with this cat?
Man, it sounds like Grandpa Simpson meandering over a Guitar Center is what it sounds like. But they made it. I mean, good for them.
They made it. Yeah. Everybody hates it, but I'm like, you know what? They still did it.
They didn't need to do that. I mean, I'll give it up for them. Honking on Rob Boo
Boo. Boo Boo. Rob Boo Boo. Wow. Thank you very much, Mercutio. More like Aerosmith honking on Rob Boo Boo.
I gotta say, at some point, they were in a room like, it's called Honking on Bobo. And there wasn't someone to go, really? No. What are you really gonna call it, though? Like, somebody should have said no.
They had a song called Dude Looks Like a Lady.
Oh my God. There's a video no one for it. Said, I remember. No one said it.
Can we change it maybe to, nah, man, if it's not Dude Looks Like a Lady, we're walking, brother, you know? At that point, it's like, honking on Bobo, huh? Well, yeah, shit songs all hit, you know?
I guess put in context, honking on Bobo wasn't that bad. Yeah,
when you think about the goofy shit, anytime someone puts a microphone in front of Steven Tyler,
yeah,
he starts talking like a person that hasn't had a home for a long time, and they still find ways to do copious amounts of methamphetamine.
Yeah, man.
Because he gets to scatting in the middle of an interview, and you're like, "What are you doing, dude?"
And he looks like he looks like your friend's mom that'll like let you drink at home as long as you don't go outside. Wine mom.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I shit damn near shit when it said he looks like that's the cool mom that lets you drink at the house as long as you don't try.
That's exactly it, man. I mean, tell me I'm wrong.
Hella testing the kids' cocaine.
And I'm the one to just like telling people to lay off Robert Smith, you know, chunking up.
Dude.
But like, look, man.
But Robert Smith doesn't talk that much.
Exactly. If Robert Smith talked as much as Steven Tyler did, then I would goof on his ass, too.
He like, might say some horrible. Robert Smith, props to you for not, you know, feeling that you have to be a part of this everything I do, you have to see ass world of social media, and you can still have some mystery about yourself.
Right.
Really hard to interview. Steven Tyler, you put a microphone in front of him and he gets to like boom bop me dap me bap bap.
Oh, like, what shit. So rotten. So rotten.
I just wanted to know when you were writing I don't even want to know about the record anymore. Where's Joe Perry at? Spring Joe Perry over.
This is Ayatollah in chat. Don't want to miss a thing by Aerosmith. Actually makes you root for the asteroid in Armageddon. Got their ass.
Damn.
That's a garbage movie.
Damn.
Jesus Christ.
It's like the meanest shit ever.
No, it's I have no notes. That's great. Elvis Costello, Armed Forces is.
I forgot about, you know what? I was going to put that on my list of like notable things.
Yeah.
And I totally forgot because Elvis Costello for me personally is one of those people that I think I was supposed to like.
But you never got into it.
I just never got it.
Elvis Costello. So first of all, his book's great. His book's great. And it's interesting the fact that it sort of upends what you think of as a rock autobiography. Like he kind of shifts around in time. It's like a little bit like a history, and he has an interesting background as well. I like those early Attractions records. You know, My Aim is True. Up to Armed Forces, probably. I like they're good, and I think that like there's more awesome songs that Elvis Costello has done than people realize. But the thing is, he did all that stuff with Burt Bacharach and just missed me with that. It's not my thing at all. And like it's one of those things. It's like the Sting thing, right? People clown on the Police or like forget how rad the Police are, because Sting wrote all this middle manager music. That, like, is,
dude, you are hating on Sting so hard.
But it's, what I'm saying is, it's, the vibes are totally different, right? That people kind of retroactively assume that the Police are like that. No, the Police are like hit way differently. Elvis Costello, it's the same sort of thing, that people remember, you know, Alison Krauss stuff and like all this, like, kind of, again, you know, playing at your local Starbucks or something, right? And I mean, he was a nervy, concise pop songwriter that was coming from a, if not from punk rock itself, coming from a similar place of writing true rock and roll that was interesting and cool and not relying on convention of these big arena rock dinosaurs. Like, it sounds like a man that was like writing songs for a living and like just trying to get by day to day, you know, and that's exactly what it was. So you're gonna get some, it's a numbers game, you're gonna get some bangers and you're gonna get some ones that are not bangers. But Armed Forces is pretty interesting, and that's worth discussing on its own, just for Oliver's Army and Accidents Will Happen. But that's not really what the show is. But it's definitely on the and remember the record in the American version, they replaced Sunday's Best with a cover of a little song by Nick Lowe, What's So Funny About Peace, Love and Understanding, which ended up being like one of his biggest hits, and like, to this day, people think it's an Elvis Costello song. It's like, no, it's a Nick Lowe song. But anyway, that's a bunch of information about Elvis Costello. You're welcome.
I'm going to need you to be entertaining for 3 seconds while I turn on the phone lines.
You've said words that I've longed to hear my entire life. There's a lot of talk, too, about television and like the rock and roll stuff around there. I think there's a lot of stuff in the 80s. With Tom Verlaine, you know, pretty good. Television was always the better culmination of everything, including Richard Lloyd, who is a mind-numbingly fantastic guitar player, but needs a collaborator as much as he seems to think he doesn't. But that said, it's been encouraging to see television see a critical reimagining. And I think it's like one, I think they're one placement in a cool movie or TV show away from having a real resurgence, which sucks now that most of them are dead. But it is like that sometimes. I'm trying to remember when Marky Moon came out. I think it was 77. Yeah, 77. Well, and then Adventure 78, which is far inferior. And I think they more or less done recording wise. So that's why they're not in the conversation. But much love for television. Like, television's one of those, I came to them kind of late. Like, I knew from Ramones early on, Talking Heads, Blondie, like all that New York stuff. Then we heard Marky Moon, and I was like, ooh, this is some cool guitar stuff. I'm digging it. But those
crazy little thing called love, Queen releases in San
Diego. Oh yeah.
Roxy Music Manifesto.
See, it's crazy to like, because we got these like big ass bands.
Not Tusk comes out in 79 as well. I don't know how you feel about Tusk.
It's a lot.
That's a hell of a follow-up. Like, you got a lot to follow up on that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. In fact, I think the Album Complaints guys, was it Tusk they just did? Or maybe it's a ways back. I listened to it recently. And I was like, you know what? I'll listen to these guys talk Tusk.
Rapper's Delight by Sugar Hill Gang.
Ooh. Yeah, man. That's.
I didn't even mention that.
That's a. How many freaking songs? How many different songs come from that song, you know? And it is, God, we were like cruising through, like, I want to say Indianapolis maybe, and I threw that on just because, like, you know, somebody mentioned it. I was like, damn, we were riding through the whitest city in the United States of America listening to Rapper's Delight right now.
which I think that would be okay.
No, it was just funny. I mean,
yeah,
suburban white boys do it all the time, right? You know. Listen, 57 or something.
Dude, The Knack comes out in 79, right, and changes LA music.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of like, I think they're still considered new wave, but like power pop, like people talk about The Knack a lot. Dream Police, Cheap Trick.
I was going to talk about that because that's my favorite Cheap Trick song.
Yeah, and that's look, there's a few regrettable 80s records, but that record cooks. That's a good one.
Judas Priest, Unleash in the East live album.
Ooh, one of my favorite live records.
Fuck.
Yeah, man.
Is that
Scream
when
Judas Priest... for me, Bellingham.
Well, I don't know what the city is. That's Bellingham was just a fun city.
Is that the album where they become the Judas Priest? That kind of like how Kiss Alive.
I think so. Did they do Green Manalishi before that?
Green Manalishi.
The Fleetwood Mac song, the Peter Green Fleetwood Mac song.
Isn't that on the first
Green Manalishi with a two prong crown?
That's not on the first record? Rock and Roll, a Roller, whatever it's called.
Yeah, but I think it is. But I mean, the version that I heard was on the Unleash in the East one, which I was like, hell yeah. And someone's like, that's a Fleetwood Mac song. I'm like, bullshit. Because I was thinking of like, you know, you can go your own way, like that stuff, you know, and I was like, bullshit, that's Fleetwood Mac. And then I was like, oh shit, there's a whole,
you know, I didn't know
Fleetwood
years,
Mac. I didn't know.
I didn't know for years until I was dating a woman that brought it to my attention that Lindsey Buckingham does the theme to National Lampoon's Vacation.
Oh, oh. Yeah, yeah.
Had no idea.
Look, we can goof on all we want. That song bangs. I mean, I'm sorry. If I wrote that song, I'd be like, hell yeah.
Oh, dude, I fucking love that song. If I ever met Lindsey Buckingham, I'd be like, dude, fucking Holiday Road.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck all the hundreds of millions of records you sold with Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, we get it.
National Lampoon's Vacation, you fucking win. Yeah, the phone lines are open. Area code 510-319-1899. Area code 510-319-1899. Tell us what you think about the year 1979. Is this maybe one of the best years of music? It is a very eclectic year. We have kind of the beginnings of rap, the beginnings of hardcore punk. We have
new wave.
The beginnings of new wave, the beginnings of the new wave of British heavy metal, because Motorhead also has an amazing record this year as well.
Yeah.
My favorite Doobie Brothers album comes out in this year, and that would be Minute by Minute by Minute by Minute. I'll be holding her.
Fantastic. I have no notes.
You love me. You don't love the Doobie Brothers.
I don't hate the Doobie Brothers.
They're from the Bay too.
I know. I mean, what was it? Isn't 79 What a Fool Believes?
It's on the same record.
White man has the power. No, white man. What's that? White man does have the power, but that's not the lyric. Wise man has the power, right?
Believes. I can't right now. This way too early in the morning to attempt to hit this note.
Dude, you
know what we forgot, Conan?
It came out in 1979. I was right. Wow.
You know what we forgot, Conan?
What?
California, Uber Alice.
Oh, how we come from the Bay and we forgot.
How do we God forget damn. That, dude?
Oh, yeah. Dead Kennedys, man.
Dude, how do we forget that?
I know. That's crazy. When does Generic Flipper come out? Is that a...
I'm still going through 79. I'm really shocked at all the records. Grace Jones comes out with Muse. Grace Jones, another person that scared the shit out of me is a new person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In a good way, I hope. But
The Cramps, Gravest Hits.
Oh, I'm going to have Kid Congo Powers on the show. Did I tell you that?
No.
Yeah, he's coming on in like 2 weeks or something, which is wild because he did, you know, Gun Club, early Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Cramps. I mean, he's all over the place. Just like, hold on a second.
Can you tell him that I'm a big Cramps fan? And
he lives in like Arizona now.
Well, because it's cheap.
Yeah. But he's did a tour and stuff. I'm stoked about that. That's gonna be. I don't know. I don't listen to the Cramps that much. I think it's 1980 or so when he joins up with them.
That's before Bikini Girls and stuff.
Yeah.
That's the song I first heard and I was like, well, I'm hooked.
Oh, one of the all-timer, I mean, Garbage Man is like, first time I heard that, I was like,
all women are bad.
Like, what is this? This is crazy, man.
I love that shit, dude.
And then you see them and you're like, what manner of BDSM club do these fools roll
that's
out of?
What hooked, dude, that's what hooked me. I was living with my grandma, and her nephew was living with her. I call him my uncle. Much, much older. He's in his 70s now.
Right.
He had some crazy film magazine out of San Francisco, kind of not quite a zine, but maybe it was even a zine. And they had a whole thing on the cramps.
Nice.
And I saw their picture, and I was like, whatever this is, I could have been more than like,
yeah, whatever this is, 11. I want to be a part of it.
I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I don't even know what these people are doing, but whatever they're doing, it looks scary.
Poison Ivy looking like the coolest chick that ever walked the planet
ever. Like everything they do just looks fucking frightening and cool. I'm all about the cramps.
Which is wild because you think about like B-52s, it's like similar, like what the hell? Cool. But like in a way different way than the
B-52s seem like fun people to hang around with.
And the cramps seem like you might be in danger.
You're going to, and that's what, you know, I still look for that in my life, which is, like, again, I didn't get down here because I made good decisions.
Yeah, we mentioned Different Kind of Tension by Buzzcocks earlier. I that's actually my favorite Buzzcocks record. Like everyone loves the first record or the singles collection. People fuck with
fucking Saxon comes out in 79.
Saxon
with the self-titled. Before Denim and Leather, dude.
Denim and Leather will bring us together. What was
that? Oh, dude.
Denim and Leather.
this is, dude, we're.
Did I tell you, we did a deep dive. Tony Ash fell down a Saxon rabbit hole some time back. And I don't remember where we were driving to go do something. We can just presume it was the band. And he was like, you know, actually, some of these later Saxon records are not bad. And I'm like, what? Really? And so we went through and, like, listened to all of them. And he's not wrong. They're pretty good. I just was like, the production is just hilarious. But, like, that band has been around way longer than people realize. Because they, like, formed, like, 1975.
Yeah, they were part of, I think, the new wave of British. This is my take on it.
I can't believe we're talking about Saxon on this show. People are like going to be like disassociating like it ain't nothing. It's like, oh my God, talk about politics, please.
Yeah, this is fuck that day.
The thing about Saxon is
the neoliberal sound of Saxon is what really enticed Metallica to kill Napster. those bands, in my opinion, are the offspring of Led Zeppelin. They wanted to be a harder Led Zeppelin.
Well, because as we mentioned, I mean, it wasn't quite I'm in the mood for a melody, I'm in the mood, but all of my love, that's what Led Zeppelin's up to. All of my love, which I, you know,
they were communication breakdown. They're trying to be Led Zeppelin one, Led Zeppelin, because that's what they grew up listening to. And they want to turn
that rock and roll, hard banging. Yeah, man.
And to me, the band that really does it right is Diamond Head.
Wow. Okay. Jeez. All right. We're going deep on. But the thing is, what I like about these conversations that we have is like, there's a lot of overlap for a lot of our stuff. You know way more about the metal stuff than I do. And I know a good amount, but you know way more. But I go deeper on like the punk rock stuff.
Yeah,
I think.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. I don't know people's names like you do.
It's a pretty useless skill, dude.
That's how the Nick Young that plays guitar in Bitter Lake is like that with guitar players and any genre of music. You know, he plays blues with his dad all the time.
Oh shit! The guy from Diamond Head looks like a freaking movie monster.
Yeah.
This man looks like a guy by a truck.
Those dude, hey, this is before video. And when video hit, it was like, you're not ready. Not ready.
Wow. Jesus Christ, that guy's rough looking. Even as I'm looking at a picture when he was young, it was no prize. No wonder they didn't have a big hit.
But my favorite Metallica covers are Diamond Head songs. Yeah. Helpless. Oof.
That's interesting.
Am I Evil?
Oh, is that them? Oh, yep. I love that. Okay.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Cool.
So, and there's another. Is the Prince? I cannot stop looking
at this man's face.
He's a rough dude. He's a rough. You look at him and you're like, yeah. Time has not been.
Time has not been kind to this man. Sorry. Dude. I again. So here's where we're at. Leave Robert Smith alone. But the man from Diamond Head looks fucked up. Steven Tyler, right amount of clowning. Exact right amount of clowning. Yeah, dude does look like Freddy Krueger. You're right, Dusty.
He's rough around the edges, man. You know, but
peace and love. But
the guy wrote some for me. Diamond Head did. If you wanted Aerosmith, if you wanted Led Zeppelin 1 through 4,
yeah.
And they stopped doing that
because they weren't even doing that anymore. Yeah, exactly. So and
go listen to the new wave of British heavy metal.
Look at Priest.
Texan. I would say Priest's second record.
Yeah.
Is it Sad Wings of Destiny?
Yeah. And when they get into like the, you know, Living After Midnight.
Oh.
Rocking to the Dawn. Yeah, yeah.
What is Dude that? Looks like a Krueger.
It does, man. It's not nice to clown on a man, but he looks.
Oh my God! Wait, someone answer me this. Someone answer me this. I don't know if it's is that Motorhead record, the one where they do the split
Bomber?
With Girl School.
You're talking about the 179, right, Bomber?
Yeah,
that's got Dead Men Tell No Tales. That's what.
That's on Leon Eights of Spades. That split with Girl School, I love that.
Girl School. Yeah. Yeah, Stone Dead Forever.
Rupert Holmes, the Pina Colada song comes out. It's
wow. We just went from Saxon to the Pina Colada song.
And now you know. And now, Cody, you know why I'm single.
Dude, I keep looking at this Brian Tatler picture, and it is. I mean, it's this. Look. If you want to talk about modern horror movies, cast this man. You don't need makeup or nothing. Just have him around. Dude, just jump scare. So oh, shit. It's like a Krueger. Brian Tatler. He's...
And you know he smokes cigarettes, drinks coffee, and eats cheese.
He looks like it. He looks like he's doing it right now, man.
You're just like, oof. Come on, brother.
Okay, I gotta close that window. I can't have that man looking at me. There's no way.
Before we take this call...
Yeah.
Whitesnake releases Love Hunter. No one knows that album, and you're not supposed to.
Is that their first record?
No.
Yeah, they formed in 78, didn't they?
Did they?
Coverdale had left. He was in Deep Purple before that. He's one of the many people in Deep Purple. Speaking of which, what was Deep Purple?
Yeah, I think it is their first record because it doesn't have Fool for Your Lovin' on it.
Got it. Okay. So when was Deep Purple? Let's see. Well, then they split up. I guess they split up for a while and they came back. Yeah, you know why? Okay, yes, because Richie Blackmore is doing Rainbow with Dio.
Rainbow is actually releases in an album in 79 as well.
Yeah.
I made a playlist, if you guys are bored, called Old School Metal. And I definitely put, I made one called Glam Jams, and I put like some proto glam shit. And it starts off with the original Fool for Your Lovin' by Whitesnake that they did in like 80.
So back to Rainbow real quick. They did release an album in 1979. It's Down to Earth, which is the first one they did without Dio because they wanted to write a hit. And Dio's like, no, man, like we got to keep this on the real shit.
Which is so fucked up because that dude's voice is so over. Like you could write a hit with Ryan James Dio.
And the first thing they do after Dio left is Since You've Been Gone. Which fucks, by the way. That's a great song.
It is a great song.
Like I've actually talked about it. I was like, could we cover that? I think we could cover that because people don't know that. People don't know Rainbow. Like nerds know Rainbow. But like it'd be like, well then we'd be doing like this is their big sellout hit. But it's a jamming song, man. It's so good. But like it's so messed up in that Dio documentary because he's just, you know, being the best at what he does and being like a true artist and takes a stance and they boot his ass out of the band.
The Dio documentary had
it's so good. Oh,
waterworks.
I know it's so good.
There's two music documentaries that I will just cry like a baby. The Last Doll. If you don't cry.
Oh, the New York Dolls one.
Watching that documentary, there's a hole in your soul.
Exactly. No, it's rough.
And the Dio doc, just thinking about it is giving me goosebumps and tearing up. That man was in the industry for so long. He was like a doo-wop.
for real. Like it's crazy. It is insane. Like how and he stayed true to himself the entire time. And basically was the coolest guy. Like the coolest guy. He like did a helping hand to like anyone that needed it, and like just got done dirty, like left, right. Like I said, Rainbow booted his ass out just so they could write a hit.
Like that's, dude, Ronnie James Dio's Doc in The Last Doll.
Yeah.
I can't think of two Doc groups. Like, oh man.
That's heavy, but it's
very heavy, very heavy. So we got some phone calls.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
No. Remember the phone lines are open. Area code 510-319-1899. Area code 510-319-1899. Conan, are you drinking coffee?
I am drinking coffee, yes.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
So I'll send it over to the chat.
I can't do it, dude. I can't do it. That's how old I am. Calling. I think I know who this is. Calling from a 216 area code caller. What is your name and where are you calling from?
Dr. Sloan calling from Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
Home of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That's right.
So, Dr. Claw, what did we miss?
So, first of all, I want to say 1979 is definitely one of my best years in music, recorded music. I find myself, I like a lot of albums and, you know, songs that came out in 79 and 80. Mm-hmm. And then also in the years bookending them, 78 and 80, you know, in 78 and 80. So, like, and speaking of that, one minor correction, Minute by Minute actually came out late in 1978, but all of the singles came out or hit in 1979, which is why in the 80 Grammys, both, like, they won a whole bunch of awards for that album.
Oh, and sure.
Christopher Cross, whose album came out in 80, like won like the best new artist of that year or something like that. So that was the yacht rock year of the Grammys, which was 1980.
But What a Fool Believes was
all the songs like hit on the charts in 79. Like What a Fool Believes. And, and it was Minute by Minute where I feel like the Doobie Brothers had codified the Michael McDonald, you know, like leadership / influence on that group.
Yes.
Because prior to him coming on, they were a Southern rock band out of Northern California.
Yeah.
From the Bay.
Yeah.
Tom Johnson, who was really their leader, got, you know, ill, couldn't perform. And then they were looking for somebody to kind of fill in from him. And they, you know, Jeff Baxter, who was in the band by that point. Ironically, Jeff Baxter, guitarist, went on to work for the military industrial complex
as some
kind of weapons consultant or something like
that. No, he's a literal war profiteer.
I didn't know that.
No, it's a wild story. Like it's
Jeff Baxter had been touring with Steely Dan before he came to the Doobie Brothers. And Michael McDonald had been touring with Steely Dan. I think he was the one who brought Michael McDonald into the band. That first album with Michael singing on it, Taking It to the Streets, was like a split. It was split down the middle because you had a lot of songs that the Doobies had written and a couple of demos that Mike McDonald had put together, and they cleaned up and made, like, you know, full studio joints. He wasn't completely integrated into the group by then, but certainly they had been able to put out a song and basically made his song the title of the album. And the sound of their album, there's a song called Rio on that album that really sounded different from their earlier Southern rock sound. But the Southern rock sound was still in there. It just kind of took a back seat to what Michael McDonald was bringing with the Fender Rhodes and the, you know, the tenor voice and more R&B influenced stuff. Later on, you know, contemporary R&B, I should say, influenced stuff, not so much the 60s R&B influenced stuff, even though they still had hits where they remade that sound. So that was the one thing I wanted to say. Also, let me get two big, I know you might have said them already, let me get two big elephants out of the room for 79. Michael Jackson, Off the Wall, contrary to popular belief, that is not his first solo album, but it is his first solo album post-Motown, and his first adult, he was 21 when he made that album, solo album. It's bookended, which a lot of people who are, like, you know, vaguely, you know, aware of him, it's bookended by two great Jackson's albums that sound very much like preludes and postludes to Off the Wall and Destiny and Triumph.
Triumph.
And it was like a continuous party of that music. Huge record. Gangbusters. It really he had been, you know, the Jacksons were still popular, whatever, but it codified him as like a pop icon, R&B icon. A lot of people still say it's their favorite album by him. I think you mentioned the other elephant in the room, that's Prince's self-titled, which is actually his second album, but a lot of people think it's first. Very interesting record. I Want to Be Your Lover, first single. Song right after it was another single. Why You Want to Treat Me So Bad, one of my favorite 1-2 punches of the album. And while on his debut, like Prince had done some rock, I feel the one that felt more like it could fit on a rock program, like a radio station, was Bambi, a little controversial. I love that album. Sexy Dancer was on that album. That was the album that really hit for Prince, the first one that really hit for him. Of course, after that, Dirty Mind, and we know what happened after that. So those two albums. Some other ones I felt needed mentioning. You mentioned Zappa. Zappa had a couple of albums in that year. Yeah. Joe's Garage, which when I heard that album the first time, I was like, this dude is out there. Like, in retrospect, I thought it was kind of cool because he was like talking about stuff that was happening in like the world at the time and doing it in this like this weird like sense of humor he has about those things. He has a song called Why Does It Hurt When I Pee on that record. I'm like,
yeah.
He also had Shake Your Booty. What'd you say?
I said definitely an original Frank Zappa, for sure. You know, don't need the yellow snow, et cetera.
Yeah, he had Shake Your Booty that year. That was a record where it was like a live album with a couple studio stuff on it. But it had this another off-the-wall, no pun intended, record called Bobby Brown Goes Down. It's not about the guy from New Edition. That song was banned from radio play in the U.S. And even today, I don't think you could play that song because of what he talks about. It's about this guy who's a real dick who thinks he's like God's gift to women, and he thinks he's so far, like he's way out on it. Then he has sex with a lesbian and gets turned out, and now he finds that he's into some other things. That's Zappa. But when I think about my favorite records on the album, go back to Yacht Rock, Kenny Loggins releases Keep the Fire. Big hit on that one was This Is It, which features Michael McDonald. 79, Michael McDonald was all over the radio doing backgrounds on everybody's songs and made fun of it on SCTV the year after. That song was great. There's another song on there called Who's Right, Who's Wrong, where Michael Jackson appears in the background vocals. It's a great song. The title song with the vocoder is great. You'll Love Half a Chance, which is co-written by Stephen Bishop. Now that I think about it, Stephen Bishop had a record called Bish in 1979 that I really loved. Chaka Khan is featured on that album. A Fool at Heart's name of the song. And then, you know, my Comfort Zone, 79. Oh, yeah, Van Halen 2 came out that year.
Yeah, we talked about that album.
Yeah. 1979, so R&B, that was when R&B started standing for racquetball and backgammon. Earth, Wind, and Fire, following up All in All with an album called I Am, has a lot of classic songs, band, like marching bands play In the Stone a lot. I Can't Let Go, Boogie Wonderland, co-written by Allie Willis. And After the Love Is Gone, which is, I think, David Foster produced, and I think he's one of the songwriters on it. That was when they really started to venture out into different types of music. But that was a huge record for Earth, Wind, and Fire. The Commodores had an album called Midnight Magic. And you look at the cover of that album, and you see the Commodores dressed in these white leisure suits. You think it's going to be Four on the Floor disco.
Yeah.
But that album is it's one of the funkiest records. But the biggest hit on those records, on that record, was Lionel Richie ballad, Sail On.
Sail On.
Still, because this was coming right off of Three Times a Lady. There was the album prior. But the songs I love on that album are the title track, You're Special, and another one called Wonderland, which is also, it's a ballad, but it's more of a funk R&B ballad that's sung lead by Lionel. I'm seeing some other records. Let's see.
Commodores have 15 records, Game, by the way.
Second album, Busting Out of L7. Risque by Sheik. Somebody in the chat mentioned We Are Family by Sister Sledge, which is produced by Sheik. Now, I often talk about how albums are quote-unquote Volvo music. That album by Sister Sledge is Oldsmobile music. And it's quite literally Oldsmobile music, because in the 80s, they used to use We Are Family in their ads.
I remember that, yeah.
But, you know, when I listen to that album, oh, hell yes, in the chat, Chicago 13. That's the Street Player album, but that's not the that's not the song that really gets me into that record. It's Life Is What It Is, Loser With a Broken Heart. That is a great album. I used to play that that record. Like, when I think about Loser With a Broken Heart, it makes me, like, I was out in New Jersey up early, like, before 7 o'clock, going to drive back down to South Carolina. And that was a song that I had playing, was that song. That is an underrated Chicago record. Street Player can bang your song. You know, Street Songs Burning in My Mind. You know, they had that. Some song had that as a loop. That is a great album. I love Chicago 14 from 82. That's the last one before David Foster came to town. Let's see, Patrice Russian Pizzazz. Yes, that's Haven't You Heard. That's a lot of, like, that is a great record. Going back to Zappa, one of his famous collaborators, or like band members at one point, George Duke had two albums that year, Follow the Rainbow, and Master of the Game, which on the song Games features one girl from Oakland named Sheila Escovedo. If you look at the videos that are created from that album, you'll see Sheila in those videos. She was hanging out with George in that time. Master of the Game also has I Love You For Myself, which is sung by Lynn Davis. Great song, great record. What else was it? You guys mentioned Stevie Wonder.
We did.
Earlier. Mm-hmm. And I can, you know, 2 years after, was it 3 years after Songs of the Key of Life, he dropped another double album. Shout out to Tusk, who followed up Rumors with a double album. And,
sure did.
It did something completely different. That album was not what people were expecting from Stevie as a follow-up, but it's a great album. It's a companion to a film of the same name. The one song that takes out of there is Send One Your Love. I remember one time I was playing Outside Your Window, and my brother just walked in the room and was like, what the hell is this? He followed it up with a more conventional album called Hotter Than July, has Rocket Love, has All I Do, and has Happy Birthday, you know, the official black version of that song. let's see, what else in 79 and 80? 79 also, so Parliament comes out with Glory How Stupid, which was a follow-up to, and I think one of their best albums as a group, in Motor Booty Affair. There are some songs I really enjoy on it. It's got, like, you know, Theme from the Black Hole. It's got The Big Bang Theory. It's got Color Me Funky. And, of course, the title track. By that point, you know, Parliament was really, those years prior, was hard defined by Flashlight, which was on Funkintelekid a couple of years in 1977. By the time they got to Glory House Stupid, that was definitely the Flashlight sound was the sound. Junie Morrison from the Ohio Players and other bands had joined the group and really started to shape it. And then on the other side of the P-Funk nation state was Uncle Jam, Want You, an album that I personally tracked down in the 90s because of the song that's most known for it, Knee Deep, not just Knee Deep, the 15-minute opus, which was introduced to a younger audience, Good Burger. It's the main sample of De La Soul, Me, Myself, and I. The other one, since you mentioned, somebody mentioned Edwin Bird's song in the chat, Rapper Dapper Snapper is the drums that go behind that. Freak of the Week is a great song. Digital Underground sampled it for Heartbeat Props. There's another song on the album. It's more rock theme called Field Maneuvers that I really like. That's when Philippe Wynn from The Spinners was in, you know, hanging out with Parliament Funkadelic. He's all over that album. I think it's Holly Wants to Go to California. It's a short album, but it's a really good album. But it's overpowered by Knee Deep. But it's a great album. Everybody should listen to it. One Nation Under Groove, again, it's one of those albums from 78 that I would really talk about, because that's the album where Parliament and Funkadelic really started to merge their sounds. And while the rock element of Funkadelic was still there, like there's a song on that 78 album on One Nation Under Groove called Lunch Me to Phobia that I really love. It's got a really hard guitar. Dun, 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 dun. You know, one of those deep in the butthead guitars. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, that's a song I really like. George, if we talk about George Duke, Herbie Hancock had two albums, Fates Don't Fail Me Now, which is, you know, it came after Sunlight, which is probably one of my favorite albums. He's the reason why I have a Microkorg and a Microkorg XL and Korg R3 and all these vocoder synthesizers because of that album. And he followed it up with one where he tried to get a little bit more conventional with the song Trust Me, which is a flip of his song Sun Risa from the album The Piano, was really nice. And there's a song he wrote with Ray Parker Jr. called Ready or Not on the album. Then Direct Step is notable because it's one of those first albums that was recorded direct to disc. So they had a bunch of people in the room, you know, a live band. They were playing the album and recorded it like immediately to disc. Let's see, 79, before I hop off, 79. Oh man, so we talked about the elephant in the room. We talked about Bob James, little album called Lucky Seven. Again, that's an album that's like bookended between two albums that I really love there. Lucky Seven, the album has, you'll immediately recognize it because it has the ladybug on the cover. It's got a song called Lookalike, which people will recognize because of the sampling of that song. But there's a lot of other songs, Fly Away, Blue Lick. There's another song that I'm struggling the title of. It's called Stone, Big Stone Town or something like that. Mm-hmm. Peak Volvo. I was listening to a lot of that stuff in 79. You go to 78, that's when you get Bobby Caldwell. In 80, he drops Cat in a Hat, classic album, in my opinion. I mean, there's so much great music in there. And if I'm not mistaken, was it 79 or was it 80 where all that disco sucks BS happened? You know, the infamous Comiskey Park thing happened where...
I believe that was 1980.
You know, I'm surprised that didn't come up in this.
It's a notable piece of history, but it's pretty dumb.
Go ahead.
You know, it's a dumb piece of history. So there's a documentary I saw like last year that it put that in context with the rest. I forget what it was called, but it was interesting to see it in context and just how much of an asshole move it was, basically.
Yeah, it was racist too.
Mad racist.
Super racial.
Yeah, I mean it was, and I mean, when you hear some of the reactions to...
Actually, I'm wrong. It's July 12th, 1979. Disco Demolition Night.
Delight, oh, you said it was 79, yeah. Conan. Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that was 79, yeah. So...
Steve Dahl.
When you start hearing like some of the reactions to Prince, for example, I felt like that was like an offshoot of that. Because he was opening for the Rolling Stones. And,
yeah.
And
they kicked him
off.
Yeah,
and that was rough.
Yeah, they kicked him off that tour.
Yeah, that was rough. Yeah, and '79 was an interesting year. I feel like it was somewhat transitional, but it was also, it was a year where so much, like, it's hard to classify a lot of this music. I talk about like the Doobie Brothers and, you know, how they went from being a Southern rock band into something else. While still having that Southern rock in the back end, there were groups like Clover that were out at the same time. Huey Lewis comes from that group, by the way, Clover. Yeah. And I think they also were based in California, if I'm not mistaken.
True, and he's also on a Thin Lizzy record. He's on the Live and Dangerous Thin Lizzy record, which is wild.
Yeah, so, like, you know, a lot of the heroes of the 80s really started breaking out in that late 70s period. Bon Scaggs did not have an album in 79. I had to look it up. Oh, there was one thing I did want to say, too. And I remember kind of this yacht rock thing, because I think you briefly mentioned Toto. I know it was mentioned in the chat. Mm-hmm. So Toto had this album in 1979 called Hydra.
More of a rock
record. It was an album that, it's kind of like songs, some of the songs are prog rock. Some of them are R&B influences. Some of them are jazz. And that's just who Toto was. Toto, because they were a band of not just studio guys, young studio guys, but children of young studio guys.
Yeah. Joe Picaro. Second generation Sesh Bros. Yeah.
Marty Paich was a songwriter, musician, studio guy. His son David is in the band. By the way, David Paich was one of the songwriters for Cheryl Lynn's Got to Be Real. And that's how he showed. He wrote Miss Sun for Bon Scaggs. And they were, Toto was kind of like the backing band or the unofficial backing band for Bon Scaggs at one point. There's a Bon Scaggs record that I can't listen to it without thinking of Charleston, South Carolina, because I played it over and over when I was at the college in Charleston. Down to the Left from 1977 has a song called Give Me the Goods. Jeff Porcaro's playing drums on it. And he is playing at the very end of the game. He is playing this incredible time on the hi-hats and on everything else. It's like he's playing 30-second notes with his left hand. I'm like, how are you doing that and not getting wrist cramps? And the timing is like a drum machine. It is so on point. I'm like, I used to play that song over and over, that one in 1993. I can't play that album without thinking of late 90s South Carolina Low Country. But he didn't have an album that year, and he had the Hits album in 80, you know, and he had the Middleman that same year. So I was thinking if he had any albums, and see that Todd Rundgren have any albums again, Bookends, Utopia, Bookends. I just going through all of these records. You mentioned the Tubes. Was Feeway Bill in that group? Feeway Bill.
Yep. Feeway
Bill. Yeah, I thought so. Yeah. Feeway Bill was in Tubes. Yeah. 1979, that's a year where a lot of the music that I feel either directly or indirectly shaped my ear. Crusaders, 1979, someone mentioned, Street Life. And, you know, by then, the Crusaders had basically, it wasn't smooth jazz. That's not what it was. But what had happened in that part of the decade, like, basically when they stopped being the Jazz Crusaders, they started being a different kind of fusion, started having more blues and rock in the sounds of their music. And then by the time that both, I think two members of the band left, Wayne Henderson was gone. And I can't remember if anybody else left. When he left, they were kind of like, okay, we got to reformat this. So the jazz music became more, It's not like, it's not hardcore like Mahavishnu Vishnu Orchestra or like, you know, what Chick Corea was doing and stuff. But it was more, you could play this on R&B radio. Herb Alpert had Ride, 1979. That's the Hypnotized beat. That is 1980, one of my favorite songs. And one more record, because I saw somebody say something about it. Let's see. 79. What came out that year? Oh, yeah. Stanley Clark. One of my favorite albums by Stanley Clark came out that year called I Want to Play for You. Stanley Clark kind of gets dinged by some bass aficionados because on his solo material, Stanley tries, mostly plays the bass as a lead instrument and not the holding it down, even though he's more than capable of doing that. And it kind of felt like he was going too far out into prog rock like he did on Modern Man, you know, some of these other albums. But that album kind of takes it home and shows you he's got a lot of range to his music. The title track is a banger. Streets of Philadelphia, one of my favorite songs by him, even though a record review site didn't like it very much. I just love that album. I think that's all I want to say about 79. It was a great year. It barely scratched the surface. 79, 82, I think, is my favorite year in music. But 79 is, and 80 is really right there. I mean, there is so many great records that came out of this year. So many, like, you mentioned B-52s, Talking Heads, like, groups that were doing, and even Talk, like, they were doing something different in that year that had been done prior. And it was, like, ahead of the curve before, like, everybody started popping in and stuff. Right. So, you know what I'm saying? 79 is a great year, man. But you guys talk, there's a Love It Conan comes on the show and you guys start talking music and movies and stuff, because it's just, you know, it's just a great listen. It's like one of my favorite things to talk. And you can see, I can stay on this thing forever, but I'm getting off because I know some people behind me. So
I feel like you're an unofficial co-host.
39 is great. If you haven't heard any of the records I talked to, just check them out. You know what I'm saying? And that's it for me, man.
Thank you very much, Dr. Carl.
I was appreciated.
Very, very informative call.
Two things real quick that I want to get to. One is a question. So what does, we mentioned Dio earlier. What do Dio and George Clinton have in common?
Cocaine?
Well, probably. But no.
Same dealer?
They both started as doo-wop groups. So.
Really?
But pre-Parliament, it was the Parliaments.
Yep.
With George Clinton.
After the cigarettes. Yeah. Right,
absolutely. And it was, what was the name of it? What was the name of it? That Dio's group? I could look this up, I guess. I was too busy looking up Toto's discography when he was talking about it. I was like, man, they got a lot.
No one talks about Hydra. It's a rock record.
But it's Ronnie Dio and the Prophets is the other one. So that's, I think that's kind of notable because, you know, we mentioned Dio a lot. Klaus was bringing up George Clinton, Parliament. By the way, Eddie Hazel, one of the great underrated rock guitar players.
Beast. Sure.
And if you don't know what I'm talking about, go listen to Maga Brain right now.
Second
thing real quick. Wild, that Off the Wall and The Wall came out the same year within about 3 months of each other. Isn't that crazy?
Dude, I'm looking at more records that we haven't even named.
Dude, we could do this for hours.
Mickey Mouse, Disco, Kris Kristofferson, Shake Hands with the Devil. I named a bunch in the chat. Barbara Streisand has The Main Event, which is a massive record for her. I think it's the best-selling record of the year. Patrice Rushen starts doing more fusion music and gets away from the traditional jazz. Definitely Parliament and Funkadelic both released music that year.
Talk about a built-in world, too. There's
so much. Again, I think what I'm going to do, so we already did 1993.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Or was it 94 we did?
No, it was 93, I think.
Okay, we did 93. This is 79.
I can't remember.
I'm going to make a playlist for both of these and put some deep cuts on there.
Absolutely. Got to, because like now, like even some of the stuff is stuff I listen to all the time.
Yeah.
But I'm like, man, I kind of want to like go back and listen to it now. By the way, crazy to me that we didn't really talk about The Wall. you know, one of the biggest rock records of all time, right?
Yeah.
Like Pink Floyd, like
still but, quoted
but to this day. Waters runs around and tours it, you know, like still, it's crazy.
Still quoted, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and there's so much to talk about there, just in the context with Pink Floyd, and where they were at the time, and that Waters wrote two records. He wrote The Wall and the one that ended up being his first solo record, the one the chick who's hitchhiking on the cover. I can't remember the name of it, but like that's how like prolific he was. And it's crazy that like, I mean, that band had a huge career pre-Wall, but there's also like pre-Wall and post-Wall for rock music, because it changed what people's, when you think about like successful concept records, as far as being like, you know, one of the best selling records of all time, you know, like it's that's one of how many people were sitting there getting the seeds out of their weed on that album cover, you know, and Dark Side of the Moon too. Pros and cons of hitchhiking.
Lots of black lights were purchased because of The Wall.
Yeah.
And Dark Side of the Moon.
The black light industry. What's a
black movie? Light industry? Like Pink Floyd. Got any more hits in you?
We need to move these black lights. We gotta get some bangers.
All these black lights and these dumb fucking posters.
We're gonna need a concept record. See? I don't know who they're talking to that's talking like this, but yeah.
That's exactly how all record industry people talk.
Exactly. We did talk about Candy L, Mark. I think underrated. Everybody, when they think of the Cars, they usually think of the first record, which is astounding as well. But Candy L was just as good. And honestly, kind of, that's where you really see Elliott Easton rip as a guitar player.
You know what comes out? And Claude didn't mention it.
Oh.
Shalimar. Big fun. I love Shalimar. The original Shalimar.
Oh, wow.
With Jodie Foster and Howard Hewitt.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, so yeah, this is going to be a fun playlist to make because it's going to be so bipolar sounding because I'm not separated by genre.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
I'm like, gonna be like Rainbow and like some Brazilian artist.
Donna Summer followed with a birthday Donna party. Summer. Yeah. It's like, what's happening?
Some Japanese pop. You're just going to get it all. Just like, you want to hear 79, motherfucker? Here's 79.
You know, I mentioned Ecstasy a couple times. It's wild to me that the record that came out, I don't know. There's a great documentary more or less on XTC, but largely about Andy Partridge, who's this notoriously difficult dude, and but a genius songwriter, but just like very much, you know, we can safely say he's on the spectrum, probably. It's the nicest way to put it. But one of the most infuriating things Andy Partridge, and I love this, is like he's such a diligent and thoughtful songwriter, but like one of the first big hits was Making Plans for Nigel that the other guy wrote that one, and it was like their biggest, and like we're talking about a band that like he wrote endless banger after endless banger, and like, and then the ones that like, you know, Helicopter like did pretty well, but yeah, Making Plans for Nigel, bass player wrote that.
I didn't know that.
And he's like still mad about it. He's still like you can tell, and you like you could drive a truck between what he's talking about in this documentary. But they're such an interesting band because they had that, you know, Dear God, blah, 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 blah. Like that was like a 90s hit, you know, like they have like all these eras and epochs of hits. There's whole eras of that band that like I think. Yeah, Mark's right. Generals and Majors actually is Colin as well. So the two most well recognized songs on Drums and Wires are written by the other dude. If you're just into irascible music personalities, I highly recommend the Andy Partridge.
Oh, dude. Ohio Players have Everybody's Up in 79.
Oh, yeah, man. I think it's called This Is Pop is the name of it. XTC, This Is Pop.
Dude, we have another phone call. But yeah, 79 is just looking like a banger of a year for funk as well.
It's Ohio crazy. It's like punk rock, post-punk, new wave, funk, new wave of British heavy metal, like all this like
all of it
music, like, all happening the same year. Yeah.
It's wild. All this music that's going to change the way music. Also, a lot of these people too are like radio guys that don't make the video crossover.
Right, cuz some of them look like they got hit by a truck, like that one dude from
from Diamond Head.
From Diamond Head, yeah.
Because what's funny when if we were to do like 79 hits like these albums,
yeah,
and then we look at 81, I'd love to see how many people still hang on.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Oh, that would be interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Because once MTV comes, the music changes. Because like, well, who's doing these little shitty videos? And it's like, well, these Duran Duran guys that nobody gives a shit are.
But then by the same token, you have bands like Devo that are taking advantage of the format and like doing freakish things with it. Which, by the way, we didn't even talk about Duty Now for the Future, which is low key one of my favorite Devo records. But just like that Gang of Four record. Wild, weird listen. Like it's just recorded strangely. Like it's just like something about it is very austere. It's very
Are they from LA?
Devo? No, they're from Ohio.
They're from Ohio.
They're like one of the only like Ohio's only success stories.
Well, I mean the funk stories.
Well, yeah, I mean there's just what's their freaking they were at Kent State.
They were there for the massacre?
Yes.
That old?
Yes. It was an inciting incident for them doing what they did that eventually became the band. But
How old were they when they hit then?
Akron, Ohio. First one was Are We Not Men, We Are Devo, which I believe is 77, 78, 78. Yeah, 78, and then Duty Now for the Future, and then Freedom of Choice. Freedom of Choice is the one that has Whip It. That's 1980, and that's, of course, like, you know, the biggest song in the world. Then you got New Traditionalists, which is good. Oh No, It's Devo, which is underrated. And then Shout, which is a Devo record. Then they kind of in the wilderness for a while, and then they come out with Something for Everybody in 2010, which is astounding, and people don't even listen. Of course, yeah, Jerry Casale, of course, friend of the show. I've had him on plenty of times. Big Devo head. Could do a whole show just on Devo. But
is that show coming up? Maybe.
I know a guy, and it's a guy in Devo. I mean, I've done him on my show plenty, but I mean that's a great crossover one. I've dragged him on a Movie Night Extravaganza a couple times. You got to hear.
I like
that.
To see. You know, I want to do more things where we bring other people on this kind of thing to talk about these years. I'd love to hear with someone that was in the business at this time when it was cooking. They were it was cooking. Yeah. Like what would he have to say about a year like 1981?
Oh, and he does not pull punches too. Like. Jerry Casale will name names like immediately.
Oh, I would love to hear what he would have to say about 1980 or even like 84.
Sure.
You know, but look, let's take this phone call.
Okay, yeah, we're
calling from a 843 area code. I think I know who this is. Caller, what is your name and where are you calling from?
You guys hear me?
Yes.
You can, yes.
Hello?
Yes.
All right. Boy, just a fizzle. I'm just I'm riding around on my motorcycle.
Jesus Christ!
You guys are trying to get my headset.
But please be careful.
Sounds wild, dangerous.
First of all, don't tell me what to do. Second of all, you're right.
I'm like terrified to speak right now, so I'm just gonna give you the floor, Diz. What say you about the year of our Lord 1979?
I mean, 1979 does answer the question of what happens when you try to play funk and your rhythm section just isn't very good. You get disco.
Damn.
Like, that's literally what it is. It's like, okay, like disco is just like, it makes sense that the Bee Gees were a rock band before they were a disco band.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, okay. Because like, It sounds like I found that interesting today, where it's just like, oh, they were a rock band. I was like, okay, that makes sense because disco, like their rhythm section, is just four on the floor.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, there's no syncopation, and I was like, oh, that makes sense because like the biggest difference between disco and funk is there's way more syncopation in the rhythm section in funk, and I'm like, oh, so that's what happens when you trade in your rhythm section and they're white. You get disco.
Wow. Like that, huh?
Is that racist?
Damn.
I feel like it's racist.
On a racist score of 1 to Jason in the Champagne Room, you are an 8.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah,
I was trying to go for that Grand Wizard in Alabama. But
It is crazy.
I'm falling short, so it's unfortunate.
So the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. The Saturday Night Fever soundtrack comes out in 77, right? So it's right before this. They had 14 records before that soundtrack came out.
Fuck me.
14. Yeah, they started in the 60s.
Fuck me.
The Bee Gees are, and some of that stuff is no joke too. Like it's good, but it's just wild different. There's no four on the floor, you know. Night fever shit going on.
It's a lot of not making it and still being allowed to make it.
Yeah. The documentary is fascinating. Yeah. Other than
is there a way to turn coded up in the phone?
Oh my god.
yeah. Let me try this. Let me try this.
I've longed to hear that question. Is there a way to turn Conan up?
Is he better now?
Is that better?
Can you hear him? Way clearer. Like before, he sounded like he was far away.
Okay. Yeah. So I was just saying they had 14 records, Bee Gees, before Saturday Night Fever, mostly Blue Eyed Soul. You know, kind of like, you know, real, like, you know, rock in the general sense of the term, but like more not easy listening either, but just, yeah, Blue Eyed Soul. I'll stick with that. But it's crazy, like that documentary is wild because it really does get into those early days. But what it doesn't get into is Sgt. Pepper's, which they should, because
dude made me a fan.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know why they like just started trying to like, oh, that didn't happen.
I love that.
Come on, man.
Oh, yeah, dude. I was a fan. Susie Quattro is 79.
Why not?
Oh, wow. Cool. All right. Yeah. That's another groundbreaking artist.
Dizzle, are you still there?
Also, I'm still here. Okay. Also, like Michael McDonald, like when I first started listening to him when I was a kid, I thought he was black. Very white.
Yeah.
No. I thought he was when I was a kid. I was like, oh, okay. And then I saw him and I was like, who is this freaking white dude? I was like, and then I heard his voice. I was like, oh, it's Michael McDonald. Like, I thought he was like very, very white.
No.
Leonard Cohen too. when I first heard Leonard Cohen, I heard the 80s Leonard Cohen first. And I was like, what the? This dude looks like nothing like what I thought he would look like, because he was all like, ooh.
Bobby, you know, Caldwell, like, to me, is the number one white guy that everyone thought was a black guy. I really believe the music industry suppressed the What You Won't Do for Love video, so no one knew that Bobby Caldwell was white. Because he's also the goofy. It was. He passed away. Rest in peace.
Yeah.
He was the goofiest looking white dude ever. But
right.
Ridiculously talented. But between him and Michael McDonald, I think those are the two voices in R&B, I guess you want to say, where their voices definitely, especially Bobby Caldwell. There's so many. I've seen so many YouTube videos of people reacting to seeing that video. And there's no way in the world this guy is white.
Well, and it's there's, you know, that goes a couple ways too. I mean, I like Hot Chocolate. You know that band Hot Chocolate?
Yes. Yeah,
that's Everyone's a Winner. Amazing. Which almost
came out in 79.
See, it came out in 79. Yeah. But of course, most known for You Sexy Thing is that was their big hit. But if you watch those videos, it's like cool looking black guy, cool looking black guy, cool looking black guy, white dude with an afro.
That's how you know that white dude is serious.
But he is shredding. He's shredding the guitar, but it's just like so funny. It's like, wow, like, yeah, it's kind of interesting that you know, how much image made a difference, right? I mean, still does, I guess, but like now it's like people are less like, put that man in the back.
You could be a radio band though, you know.
Yeah.
Dizzle, what do you think about that, Dizzle? The radio bands of the 70s.
I mean, they were all bands were really good. Like I have an uncle, he's in his like 80s, I think, or he's in his mid 70s or something. And he was around during that time, like playing music. He still plays music. They just were never, like, their band never really hit it big. But like for a while in like the 70s and 80s, he was like touring in Miami. Fall Around, Gloria Estefan band.
Oh,
like
wow.
They were direct competition.
Okay.
And his band never made it because it never really had that like look, because, you know, it was like the early 80s, the old radio stuff. But they could play everything. And I think the radio bands are just like, you know, they're really good. And but you know, if you can't sell based on your face in the age of video, then you know there's no place for you at that point.
MTV changed it. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, they changed it. MTV changed it. Like there was a lot of songs where it's like, okay, like any Billy Idol shit that you heard, like did anybody care about what he was playing based on, you know, if you couldn't see him?
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, it was a look. Striking, yeah. Like handsome dude that, you know, all the women love him, and it's like, okay, cool, and the music's not bad, but it's not like Steely Dan, or you know, it's not like the Bee Gees. It's not any like really good stuff, you know, or right. Any Earth, Wind and Fire or any Parliament or any Funkadelic or anything like that. You know, you have to have a certain look to flourish in that video, you know, medium at that point.
And that was something that was criticized too.
It got outworked.
That was something that was criticized by bands that, you know, think about like the American Underground and stuff that like.
But going back to the topic of. White guys people thought were black. You know Alex Trebek?
Yes.
Was have you seen pictures of him in 79?
We played a clip of that in the Champagne Room maybe a few weeks ago of Alex Trebek talking about being a spokesperson for the United Negro College Fund.
I thought it was the funniest thing in the world. And like what was funny is nowadays his picture in 79, he looks just like my uncle. He has the same, like, hair, same mustache. I'm like, was everybody just like, what? Was everybody just trying to rock that Hall & Oates shit?
Dude. You know,
like, apparently, man. Nobody told him no.
He's a jerk, but Oates is a king.
Yeah. Oates is a king.
It was not enough. Like, I told my uncle, I was like, listen, you didn't have enough black people around you to swat down your stupid ideas. To like how you dress yourself. I'm not making that mistake, you know. You can't let them get out of control, or else, you know.
Yeah. next thing you know, you Bedlam. Got that. Was it Rachel Dolezal?
Dolezal.
Yeah, that's the next step.
You have to see Alex. I'll find the picture and show you, Conan. Anything else you want to add, Dizzle?
Yeah, he looks. I mean, I have some more stuff, but it's just going to be raised with the issue monetized.
Keep it above board, son.
There's one thing I want to add.
Mm-hmm.
There's one thing I want to add is that when I first started listening to you guys, when I first found This Is Revolution,
mm-hmm.
and I found you off of your appearance on the Majority Report.
Uh-oh.
And you did an impression of Norman Finkelstein. And at the time, I had no idea Norman Finkelstein was a real person. I just thought you were being really racist. It just got hilarious.
It made me
remember Michael Brook and how he used to put on like the nevish Jewish guy accent when he was
Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I was like,
is this guy doing that? No.
No. What is it?
And then I realized, no. Michael Brooks was the white Jason.
Aw, sweet.
I was like, okay.
I'm going to tell that to some of...
And then I found out...
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Good. I said, then I found Norm Finkelstein. I was like, is Jason a god? Did he will Norm Finkelstein? Like, I just thought he was being super racist.
That's hilarious, man.
Don't worry, I'll be super racist later. But
what was the show? Was it the birthday show, Jason? Where like his phone wouldn't stop ringing, and I started clowning on him for it.
Yeah, like, he's an answering machine.
Why does man have an answering machine? Like, stop calling him. He's on air.
Because Norm Finkelstein will tell you, I do not have a cell phone. Please do not try to text me. This is a home phone number. Do not text me because I cannot receive text messages.
Dude, and it was going like 24/7. Oh, the entire time he was on air, I was like, turn that ringer off.
Oh, man.
God damn it.
Say that again, Dizzle.
His cadence is, I said, Norm Finkelstein's cadence, I think somebody did an impression of him, or was it either you or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you have to have the cadence of somebody that doesn't care if they're wasting your time.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Like, yes. No, look.
That's so freaking perfect. It's a power move.
Norm, look, Dizzle, thank you for the phone call, and please,
yeah, man,
stop calling people on your motorcycle, because I want to make sure you keep commenting on the show, because these your comments make this fucking show what it is. So, take care, brother.
Dusty saying when you're 70 and your voice still hasn't cracked.
I want to add this. Norm Finkelstein, who I got the pleasure to meet in real life after we had
stellar dude. Meeting. Stellar dude, to be clear. Like, you're having fun, but stellar dude.
I don't know if I told you. So I Doug Lane, we're doing the Sublation launch party in New York a few years ago. Yeah. And Doug Lane goes, all right, Jason, I want you to do this next panel. It's gonna be Norm Finkelstein, Cuba, Spencer Leonard, and Chris Catrone. And I was like, I don't have anything prepared. All right, I'm just gonna fuck around. And Norm got there a little late, and I saw him. And this is before Norm is like Norm, right?
Right, right, right.
No one really knows who he is to that level.
You have to be like a deep nerd, basically, to know.
Yeah, him. Yeah. He's not like that cat that he is now.
Yeah.
And I just fucking did the impersonation of him in front of him.
Oh man.
He dug it, because he was fucking with all of us. He calls you. To Dizzle's point, Teray Reed hooked me up with Norm Finkelstein. He goes, I have this friend. He's not doing anything right now, and I think he'd be good for your show. And I'll say this, and I feel very comfortable saying this. Nobody was really talking to Norm Finkelstein anymore. Democracy Now! Has stopped talking with him. I think maybe before he was on our show, he might have had an appearance on Katie Halper's show. But nobody was fucking with him. And before he came on, I called him. Because he said he wanted to talk to me. He left me an email, said he wanted to talk to me. He left me his phone number with very explicit instructions not to text him. Right. That's not a joke. That is literally. No,
I get it. Because I know other dudes like that. That's one of the reasons why I clowned on the man for his phone ringing constantly. Because that's the only way people get a hold of him, probably. Probably logs on to check his email still, I'm sure. You know, no shade to the man.
But. Oh, now he's got someone checking the email. Now he's, you know, there's someone doing the email returns.
It's not there anymore.
But, and props to him for getting to that level. I'm not mad at it. But getting back to that level, I should say. But he gets on the phone and just starts shitting on me. Michelle, Paul Press. Just hello. Hello. And then, who is this? Is this the learned one or the other one?
That's how he characterized it. That's amazing.
Yes.
Oh, what a guy.
Yes. And just, you know, on the phone with him for well over an hour. Is this
the learned one or learned the other one? One.
Yeah, that, the learned one is Pascal. Shout out to the learned one. And
you didn't tell him that. Did it? It's going to go right to his head.
Oh, dude. He ended up saying it on air, too. And he fucking, we get on air and he sees Paul. He goes, you're the teacher, the public school teacher, Talcum X. And we're like, no, that's not a good thing. You can't do that. You know, he just, the fucks even have stopped, you know, and he lets you have it any old way. And, you know, to this day, man, I do cherish that friendship, and he is the kind of person.
Malcolm X, good lord.
He sends you, or he'll call you every so often.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
Or he'll send you a message periodically just to check on you to make sure you're okay. So he is actually a really, really good dude.
Yeah.
Nothing bad to say about Norm Finkelstein. You don't have to agree with someone 100% to really respect him. He's done enough amazing work over the years that I respect it.
No, and the only reason I even feel good about clowning on him is because sometimes you get a feel for like when it's not cool to do that, you know, and I've never gotten that. And I was like, I bet he'll be fine.
With he's a dude.
And he's a mensch, you know,
and he fucking, you know, he talks the shit you guys hear in front of a camera. Oh, my God. The things we have to tell him not to say in public. I don't say that. Nope, maybe
safety valve is just all the way off on that man all the time, huh?
You know, we all want to get to that point.
Do we?
I do.
Well, I don't know, man.
It's depressing when you do one thing and people are like, fuck you. And you're like, damn, everybody wants to fuck me. And not in that cool way. But in that jailhouse kind of way.
I kind of feel like you get the same me on and off air, but I definitely... I think I talk a little bit more trash.
Yeah, we all do.
But like, it's not that much different, really. But I'm pretty open book for that kind of stuff. There's some things that, like, professionally would be like, yeah, it'd be a bad idea for me to talk that trash on air.
It takes a while to get to that point, right? Where you go like, hey, maybe I shouldn't say.
Maybe I should. Not sure.
That so shit his pants last night.
Even though it's funny as hell. Yeah, exactly. By the way, getting back, I just happened to pull up the top 100 singles for 1979.
Mm-hmm.
Do You Think I'm Sexy, Rod Stewart?
That's the number one?
It's in there. It's in the top 10. But like, it's interesting.
Are you rattling from 10 up? I want to hear this.
So that's number four, mm-hmm. right? Notable because Rod Stewart, of course, the Faces, Small Faces, he was a rocker, and mm-hmm. then kind of meandered into this solo career that really wasn't happening for a long time. But it was written by a Carmen, a piece of
what?
Cactus and no. Vanilla Fudge too. Like, he co-wrote that song. Yeah,
Black Sabbath.
Do You Think I'm Sexy? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Later of Black Sabbath. Like. Crazy that, you know, that disco hit. If you want my body, do you think I'm sexy? Come on, sugar.
Remember the rumor that started about that poor man?
Yes. I do. How can I not remember that?
Every time I see Rod Stewart, I just shake my hand. And go, oh God, all of it, Rod.
So let's see a couple of our highlights. We're gonna just dash right past that, by the way. This is me being professional. YMCA, Village People, right? Disco. We were talking about
that. That's fair.
Yeah, makes sense, right? Hot Stuff, Donna Summer mentioned a few times on here. That's number seven. I Will Survive, Gloria Gaynor is six. So those three. Reunited, Peaches and Herb.
Ooh.
Reunited, and it feels so good. So then Rod Stewart, Les Freaks. By Chic.
Love it.
Second Donna Summer entry, Bad Girls.
Bad Girls.
Number one for 1979, My Sharona, The Knack.
I told you that shit changed.
Sharona. It did, man.
This is when I talk about the TikTokification of music, let's just use The Knack for a perfect example.
Yeah.
And this is this when we talk artist, all there's a lot of bullshit when people love calling themselves artists. When The Knack hits with My Sharona.
Yeah. No, that changed stuff.
What do you think happened to all those dudes doing rock stuff or funk stuff or more radio friendly stuff? They all got skinny ties, they all cut their hair, and they all tried to make My Sharona.
Yep.
Everyone in LA was trying to make My Sharona. When we talk about the TikTokification, there's a little 15 second clip of a song that you want. You want to say the thing that's going to be danceable and have the music sound a certain way, have it be so many beats per minute. And that's what people try to replicate.
Yeah.
That level of success.
And like, again, Dead Kennedys mercilessly mocked them at the same time as did a lot of people like in the actual underground.
That's where the logo for this show comes from, is Mike Cobra found that picture of them mocking the skinny tie thing with the
holy crap, is that where that's from?
Yeah, and they made this dollar sign.
Oh,
in it.
I didn't know. And so that.
We made the dollar sign the upside down.
Man, I saw Cobra at the SF show, by the way. He's doing good.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah, he was it was nice to see him. It's wild too, because like Cheap Trick was like pounding them out before that, right? And like, again, this is like Cheap Trick at the height of their power.
Dream Police is massive.
Massive, massive. And it's just crazy to me that, like, you know, but it was like that's the big in Japan thing, right? Like that they like it took Budokan and then being big in Japan to be like, oh yeah, these guys are pretty good. This guy's got some tunes, man. Which is just like Budokan is 78, so like, yeah, Dream Police is the first one where they kind of like are treated like something special rather than just
aren't they wearing skinny ties in that video?
In Dream Police? Oh, probably. Story checks out, you know. And that's the most commercially successful of their studio records by far, Dream Police.
And if you think that's what Cheap Trick sounds like, you know, go back and listen to go back and listen to Budokan.
Yeah, I mean, like, and I like the studio records. I mean, I think they're great. I mean, Heaven Tonight's cool. In Color is awesome. Steve Albini re-recorded it with them, and I wish they'd freaking release it, because it's can find it on YouTube. But it's, dude, it sounds, because I like the songs on In Color a lot, but it's produced so strange. Like, I don't love it. So, like, they basically retracked In Color, like, how, and it sounds like how they sound live. And that rocks, because In Color's got some of my favorite songs. It's got, like, Big Eyes. It's got it's one, Hello There, Downed, Clock Strikes 10, Southern Girls. I mean, like, it rips, and they should just put it out. This is me officially on this show saying Cheap Trick.
Everybody's alive, if I'm not mistaken, right? Everybody's alive?
Everybody's still alive. Bunny's not playing with them anymore. Maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. But yeah, Machine Gun Etiquette, Evil Days. I talked about that at length earlier. One of my favorite of that era of punk records, and wildly underrated. There's an episode of Vinyl and Vision where I was a guest talking about that at length. So if you're remotely interested in Machine Gun Etiquette.
I would love to be like you and get to go on music shows. And just I would love, like...
Well, okay, but what you got's pretty cool though, man. Like, I mean, and also that's like what I do, right? Like, I mean even my show, Protonic Reversal.
Yeah.
You know, it's a music related show, so it makes sense that I'd be asked to do like music.
This is technically a music show. We are classified as a music. Well,
I don't know. I can talk to some people. Got you on one show already.
you know what it is. You know what it
is. Great. That was a great listen, by the way. You on talking about that.
Being a little like slightly more serious than the silly guys.
Yeah. Exactly. Which is fun. I mean, I love 1001 Album Complaints, because those dudes, like, I know them, but like where they're coming from, I'm like, how were you on Mars? How did you not hear this? Like what? Like, it blows my mind. And it's great to listen to while driving alone, because I'll be like, what? Like all the time. With those guys, but in a good way, because it's funny, and like first ones to admit that, like, and they come at things with an open mind usually, and an open heart, and even stuff that maybe doesn't deserve it. Like an episode you're on, I was like, oh, I can't wait to hear this one, man. I would be horrible on that kind of episode, because I would be like, this is terrible, I don't want to listen to it.
I wasn't a big new metal guy.
I can't stand.
I was, metal. You know what, I was listening to. Listen to the rabbit hole I fell down of.
Yeah.
What?
Right. No, that's what made it kind of cool, because like, you know, they're kind of doing it, and not that they're being goofy, but they're approaching it from, you know, it's those guys. They're like, oh, they didn't like it. Shocking. You know. like four albums. And
yeah, I'm like, you guys never tune down, so don't talk to me about, you know.
Right.
New metal.
So it was nice to have someone that, you know, does come from the world of heavy music on to talk about that. Even though it's mostly to be like, yo, this kind of sucks though. Like,
I didn't get it.
Dude, I when I describe new metal, and I'm sorry for the people listening to it that like new metal, but fix your hearts or die. is that it was the opposite of what I was trying to do, which is to say it was empty, directionless rage, basically. And like it's big, like, ah, I'm pissed at my dad, you know, music, and like it makes me viscerally angry. The one thing I will say, it brought us Hot Snakes. Literally, John Reese started Hot Snakes because he basically had the same reaction and got that together with Froberg. So
I thought somebody from Botch was in Hot Snakes. Am I doing that?
No. No. You're thinking of
These Snakes Are Arms.
Snakes. These Arms Are Snakes. I actually had Brian Cook on the show not that long ago.
Sorry.
He's also in Russian Circles, Sumac. He's in like fucking like 15 great bands. That guy's amazing.
Thank you for the super chat, Mercutio. TIR classified as a Muzak show. We are a Muzak show. I went down a rabbit hole, dude, of.
Some friends of mine, I'll just say real quick, some friends of mine in Chatpile, if people know that band, they, especially Stin, really likes early Korn. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to listen to it, but I get it. And I get that, like, he's a little bit younger than me, not that much younger too. And it's, I feel like if you're a little bit younger than us, Jason, I feel like
it hit you different.
It hits different. And,
it hit you way different.
And man, dudes on fucking Facebook get so angry about it.
Well, you know, my drummer in Bitter Lake, Alex, grew up with Korn. He's like a Korn fan. He like really digs Korn. And I was always like, dude, I don't fucking care about that shit. And then one day I was kind of listening to it. And I was like, I can see the appeal.
Yeah.
And I was watching an interview with the bass player, the former bass player of the band Alien Ant Farm, which really gets a bad reputation because of the Smooth Criminal cover, which.
Oh, my God. I forgot that.
Ice Cube's son came out and said, we have to be honest here. This Smooth Criminal cover goes, I think, harder than the original song. And I liked Alien Ant Farm's second record, actually, because they had a video where they crashed the BET Awards. They really crash it.
They didn't.
Okay. Yes, it's called.
I'm starting to like them now.
It's called the. They got lumped in with nu metal, and so this guy, they're interviewing the bass player who's a tech now, and they're interviewing. They're asking him like, okay, why do you think you guys got lumped in with nu metal? He goes, I'm not a metal guy. I hate metal. He goes, but we got it produced at the same studios, so sonically it may sound like a nu metal record. But it wasn't a nu metal record because we don't do the nu metal stuff.
Right.
And
I think it's like Riverside or something too.
They're from Riverside.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess they had the same management. And this is what he said. And I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting. They had the same management and everything as Incubus. And if you ever heard the early Incubus records are just carbon copy bites of Mr. Bungle and Faith No More.
Yeah.
They will tell you we want to be Faith No More. By the time they release Make Yourself, that does not sound like Faith No More, Mr. Bungle, and that's a massive record for them. And they go on shooting.
And they go, oh, I guess we're doing this now. Okay.
And so the Alien Ant Farm dudes is like, well, we've always been that way. We never tried to sound like these, even though we like those bands. He goes, and they felt that they were touring with Incubus a lot during that transitional period. And he was like, they kind of bit our thing. I was like, oh, wow, what if that's true?
I have never thought about Alien Ant Farm this much, ever, at any time. That is interesting.
And the new metal stuff, I think, gets a bad rap because, like most genres of music that become a flash in the pan genre, say what people call grunge, the bigger names are bands that are hard to sweat, like Limp Bizkit.
We should do when does nu metal break? Like what's the first year?
94 is when that Korn comes out with
Was I really? I felt like I was already living in Oakland at that point.
Oh dude, it's let's
you guys didn't pay attention to it. Yeah.
Let's double check Korn.
I don't oh my god, yeah. First one is they start
94, right?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, 94-95 is when we start. They come out, but they don't really hit until like that first Ozfest.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't have any burning desire to examine nu metal, but I did find it interesting, and I was glad on that Album Complaints episode that you were on, that you were on there, because I feel like those dudes are just in their own world. I mean, peace and love. They are in their own world. Like, I'm like, how you motherfuckers never hear Gang of Four? Are you fucking kidding me? Like,
oh really?
Okay. Yeah. Like, but there's stuff like Sparks. They didn't know, like, when it's like, okay, I get it. You know, Sparks kind of oblique, but like, it's one of the reasons why I like the show though. It makes for an interesting list. I'm not trying to talk trash. Love those dudes. Actually, I'm going on to talk about Every Good Boy Deserves Fudge by Mudhoney, which. Oh. I said I would only do after I had Steve Trevor.
No, yeah, yeah. You want to make sure that
he, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Who knows? You know how they get loose there, right? So, want to make sure. But see, and by the way, Steve Turner, sweetheart of a guy, like real.
I watched a little bit of that interview. That was dope.
The first Korn records, 1984, huh? Well, we should do one of these. This is a blast, by the way. 79 is a great. I mean, like again,
dude, I'm loving 70. This is gonna be a fun playlist to make.
How much stuff, how many different genres had like turning points and like these touchstone records that like we could do 3 more hours, like we wouldn't even get anywhere near it. I didn't even do the full top 10 because I knew we'd be like, oh, we'd be off on that one, we'd be off on this one, you know, like it's crazy that But I felt the same way about 93 too. Like, I feel like in 93, it's like we barely got going, you know?
Because again, there's so much. You're like, oh, I forgot that came out. I forgot that came out. When you start looking at these catalogs of records that came out during the year, you're like, whoa. And, you know, 79 for me was definitely a whoa year because there's music. People always ask me, what new bands are you listening to? I'm like, dude, I spent so many years with my head up my own ass. I'm finally listening to stuff I missed 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's the good part of all music being available.
I'm not the complainer that everybody is about. Well, artists deserve to get paid. It's like, look, dude, you were never going to stream my shit had you not seen me live. The fact that I can put it somewhere and you can find it, I'm okay with that.
I mean, yeah, look, that's a much we've talked about this like on other episodes of this, and I got strong thoughts about all of it, but my model works pretty well, which is just, you know, touring but not just for the point of touring, and then basically have a traveling Etsy store full of stuff for
you know, Etsy, it's like you said, Etsy store.
That's basically what I mean. Like, let's get real. That's kind of what it is, you know. We got all this limited
edition crap. Into a handbag. Look at that.
Yeah, I know. It's like, is it dopey as stuff? Yes. Do people clown me for it? Yes. Does it freaking pay the bills? Yes, it does. So guess what? You can pound sand with that attitude. And you know, Kona Neutron, The Secret Friends, will go and charitably say, not a huge band, but not an unknown band either. It's that weird. I was talking to who was it? Who the fuck was I talking to? I was talking to someone about this recently about like. Oh, Shiner, Alan from Shiner, about how Shiner is like a working class band. Like, people know it. Like, people have those records, but they're selling out huge venues. They sell small rooms, you know, and you can make a career on that if you're smart and you're smart with your money and the music itself is the goal. But those stories are not told, period, in media.
They're not sexy stories because there's stories of like somebody playing a room maybe to 200, 300, maybe 500 if you get real lucky, and then you're maybe driving Uber or something when you get back home.
Yeah, nobody wants to hear that because it's like, all right, so just played a couple of shows that like get 700 people each, sold out shows, you know, great. Yeah. And now it's paying the phone bill. people aren't looking for that. And it sucks that like, why is it with stand-up comedy that you can show a working class artist.
The rigors of being a small comic.
But the bands we still can't for some reason. Like it's absolutely strange to me. And I don't know. This is a little bit of a tangent. It has nothing to do with the year 1979. But it is a thing. And other people notice it too. And it's weird to me. And I think I will tie it in the fact that I think that the idea of being in a band and being an artist, whether you like punk rock or not, punk rock opened it up. They opened up the floodgates, right? Because it was like, oh, anyone can do this apparently, because these guys are doing it, and that was huge. And so that led to innovation. You know, we talked about B-52s. We briefly talked Talking Heads. We talked briefly about No Wave and so on. All of these different genres were kind of opening things up because you had these. At the other end of it, you had like these big arena rock acts doing like this indulgent stuff. In some cases, you get The Wall, and in other cases, you get Toto. sorry, Claw.
I follow up record to Hydra with Hold the Line and all the other shit.
Look. In context,
Georgie Porgy. Oh, fuck! Get out of here.
Context is everything. Like, but it's you have like the upper echelon, these big dinosaur acts, and you have like the bottom opening up, where all these freaks are getting let in. That happened even more so in the MTV era, and this is kind of another. It's a different flashpoint history because we talked about 93. It was like 93 is like they still let the freaks in, trying to get their own Nirvana. Everyone wanted their own Nirvana. And so they were like, we will try anything. Hire a young person. Like, what are the best bands? Okay, get them. Sure, give them a major label deal. So it's interesting. This is another year that we picked that has a brief window of allowing the freaks in, right? And that's always where my heart is.
But you know what else is big here, Conan, that no one likes to talk about?
Oh, thanks, Obsessive Audio. Appreciate it.
You can be a working musician without being in a touring band. There's still studio musicians.
Yeah.
That come in and do session work. You rehearse with artists. There's still a whole industry built around being a musician. Right. It's starting to end because the drum machine comes in around this time.
Yeah.
And the drum machine is starting to change a lot of things. But there was a world many moons ago where, you know, you had top flight musicians that just, that's what they did.
Wrecking Crew. Yeah. You know, like that kind of stuff. And you also had a bunch of unemployed saxophone players who are about to get a whole lot of work. <in the 80s>. Sitting there in the bread line with their sax going out. Well, sax for food.
Like, imagine, listen, go back and listen to this music and think to yourself for a second, there's no samples in this. If you hear orchestration, there's an orchestra. If you hear a horn section, there's a fucking horn section in this. We don't, the industry doesn't have budgets to do that, number one. And number two, most people don't need it because you can replicate orchestral sounds out of your laptop.
No, with the synthesizer, and people do, right? And it's a sort of sidebar to this would be the documentary, I think it's on Netflix, about the album cover people, the Hypnosis. It's called, what is that called? Squaring the Circle, the story of Hypnosis. So these are the cats that made like all of these record covers. Right. That are did I talk about this last time? I feel like I might have.
No.
But like the classic record covers that are like, you know, the Led Zeppelin with the children, the naked children on like the weird like rock thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like all the Pink Floyd stuff, like all of these, like real, it's absolutely fascinating. And then they got the fella from Oasis talking about explaining to his child what a record cover is. and he goes through all of it and he basically, okay, well, you know, when you listen to something on your phone and you pull it up on a playlist and like the little picture comes up, it's like, yeah, that's a record cover. And she was like, oh, you should have just said that from the beginning. And he was just like, oh my God.
Oh, dude, have you been following?
It's funny. This is after like 2 hours of going into like, you know, oh, they flew to this mountain to like stage this photo shoot. This like record cover because it was the biggest deal in the world. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but yeah.
No. Again, we were talking about it earlier. Record covers for me are and VHS boxes.
Yeah,
that's how I think.
Word.
I watch this, you know,
dude. You're talking to someone post tour. Mm-hmm. I was running around with my friend Ed in a cave and out just in random ass areas in the desert. Taking pictures, and I described it as a Hypnosis style record cover because it's like we're going to go totally old school with it because this is going to be a different, the new Secret Friends record is going to be, I want it to look different, and I'm actually going to be on it for the first time ever. Well, technically I'm on the first one, but it's a cartoon representation.
Yeah.
But like that's kind of what inspired me, is I was watching these cats like retell tales of just like, oh, here's $5 million for the record cover budget. For the
record cover.
We're gonna fly to Hawaii and fucking, oh my God, dude.
Can you
like
imagine somebody doing that now? It's all green screen and there was this I don't know if you've been following this, and it's, to me, it's not really news, but it's interesting. The heavy metal band Pestilence used AI for a cover. And people started shitting on them. Like,
people light them up. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, what? Okay. A, why do you think they have a budget? First and foremost,
it's a pest. They're called Pestilence. Dude,
it's not like Pestilence is selling out arenas or headlining festivals. I'm not trying to shit on Pestilence. It's just the reality.
No. I mean, they're I presume a working band that is operating in, you know, and then like that thrash or whatever they are.
Yeah. I don't know what they're fucking. Oh, look, we can do an AI cover that looks kind of like the cover we paid, you know, probably a couple $1,000s for in '84. It's like,
yeah,
that's cool. And you know, you can go to any old site like Canva and make an album cover off stock art, so that they act like AI is taking your money and stock.
Yeah.
Art. It's like, whoa, hold up, dude. People aren't paying for album covers the way they pay for album covers.
Yeah, it's this is a very good topic for a different show, but like, I feel like that there's a lot of nuance to it. Right. And I say that as someone that when we make anything, when we make a new record, we are being part of a community. So, yeah. You know, we're paying Bob Weston for the mastering, you know, we're paying the pressing plant to press up the records. We're paying the CD plant to press up the CDs, the graphic artists to do the layout. Like, we have all these people that get money for their, in some cases, creative expression as part of an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And that's important. And so what I think is a valid complaint is that when you just have the AI do it, you take the artist out of the equation, which is mm-hmm. already a difficult field to like, dude, I still owe money to the guy who did our tour poster, not the Andy World one. I don't know him shit, but the one that's coming up, I just remember that right now. I was like, oh, I gotta pay that man. But like, if you just do it on computer, right? Like, then if you're broke, sure, I completely get it. But it's also like, you're not going to get the same kind of thing as you're going to get with a real artist, you know? And so,
oh dude, yeah.
But like, I understand like kind of lighting people up for like, and like whatever. I think there's a Dinosaur Jr. video that like has like AI generated images and stuff like that. People are mad at it. Okay. Well, I wouldn't do it, but I mean, it's going to be something. People are mad about this in the same way that they were mad about file sharing. Right. And it's like, okay. Mm. And that genie has like left the bottle as well. I'm sorry. I hate it as much as you do. AI could try to write a Kona Neutron Secret Friend song. It could certainly try, yeah. But it's never going to. Is it going to be able to write a new Dave Matthews Band song or Hootie and the Blowfish? Probably. That shit's formulaic as fuck.
Yeah, never but, having Darius Rucker on the show.
Yeah, come and miss me, Darius Rucker.
Damn it, you know.
I don't want to be with you. That's them, right?
What if he was a fan, dude? That was.
Why? You see, this is one of the reasons why I got to stop myself from talking that trash. Because I'm at the point now. Mm-hmm. Just got off tour with McCluskey, top shelf band and top shelf humans, wonderful. Mm-hmm. But honestly, if I had the choice between, oh, you can go out with this band that you love, their records are great. Mm-hmm. But they're just kind of aloof and like weird and, you know, or maybe not so cool. Or like, there's this band, they're a bunch of cheese dicks, but they're like the best people you've ever met. I might go for the second option. I mean, honestly, depending on how much it pays, not to be.
I was going to say, you know, there's some opening gigs.
Like,
might take some of those opening gigs.
Look, I could, cause I mean, that's cause it's, I've come around to the fact that if you are an artist operating in what is a just brutalist paradigm, which is just attempting to create art and eke some kind of living out of it, that maybe you have to change what that means a little bit. And I'd almost, there are bands that I like that we played with. I'm like, man, they were fucking cocks. They were just not good people to us. And mm-hmm. I don't know why. Maybe they're having like a bad night. Maybe they just were, maybe it was like pranking or something, but I don't listen to their records anymore.
Ooh, that bad.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
It's not often that happens, but I would rather just like it's just nice to deal with like good. It's great if the band is great too, and a lot of times that is, especially in our world, right? But like, I'm more the fact of like, look, these playlists, how people discover stuff. Hootie and the Blowfish is like sitting next to Gang of Four. Joe Jackson is sitting next to Saxon. You know. You don't have to look at Brian Tatler from Diamond Head's like horrific Freddy Krueger face if you don't want to, but you can listen to the music, you know? Again,
the only people
that poor bastard is catching shrapnel yet again, but anyway.
The only people I can't dig is like people I met as they were coming up that ended up blowing up and they were douchey when they were coming up.
Oh, that's the worst. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't know. They could be wonderful people now because it's just, you know, you meet people when they're young and it's like, fuck that guy.
Well, for me, you can tell a lot by when I just go silent about stuff. I'm like,
Like if you got into a point, well, you're also at a point right now where you're not playing with this like random locals. You know what I mean? Like,
locals, it's all very, yeah.
I've gotten to see some bands that have gone on to have some great success. I've gotten to see people that actually were really fucking interesting.
Yeah.
I have seen a lot of stuff that I am mad that I had to see. And you know, when you play 100 to 150 shows a year, you're
gonna
see a lot of bullshit.
Yeah, I know.
So I got to a point, and I think the year was 20. I remember it was like 2014. I was like, I'm not saying good show to anybody if I don't like their shit.
Yeah. I mean,
how was the show? Yep.
But you can keep it profesh, you know. You can keep it professional. It don't have to be like, cause back in my 20s, it'd be like, that band sucks, they're terrible, it shouldn't exist. And I'm like, man, I do not have time to be mad about such things.
Oh, I'm not mad about it. I just can't, like, you know. Like,
hey. No, I'm saying the 20s me would have been like, I was.
Oh, mad, you would have been mad. And said something like, oh, you guys were trash and you sound like drivel. Oh, no, I never. Yeah, that's just, you don't need to hear my fucking opinion because you made
that opinion on me. Yeah, I mean, whatever. Yeah. And there's people I know. I'm like, oh, you don't like the band? I'm fine. I don't like your band either. I don't give a damn. Any love for the first Deceit self-titled album, Charles Haywood's a Beast? Yeah, it's great. Sleepy Time Gorilla Museum, currently on tour, is doing a This Heat cover, actually, which I missed them because I got back from my tour and I was like, the last goddamn thing I feel like doing a show right now. So I can't believe I missed them. I saw Sleepy Time. They're fantastic. I saw them many times back in the day, because I'm from the Bay, as you know, Jason. But they do like SPQR, I think. Maybe I can't remember if it's that one or Deceit that's on. But This Heat's definitely a band. Like, look, I am a music nerd. Until like 10 years, I was like, who? This Heat.
I've never heard them. I'm not gonna sit here and lie and say I've heard them.
They're good.
I'm gonna go down these
it's
records.
Trippy. Yeah.
I'm gonna take a song from each of these records. I'm gonna make a playlist.
God. And I'm gonna homework.
That's been my getaway escape thing lately. Is like we didn't take you to it because we didn't go to TJ when you were down here, and you didn't have a chance to come down when you were down in Southern California. Mm-hmm. But there's this bar that is like my favorite fucking place in the world. It's in TJ. I might go to it later today. Right. And they play like metal, punk, rock, goth, just crazy shit. And you can request songs. I've heard so much music I've never heard before at this place. If it's a song everyone knows in the bar, the whole bar is singing along. I was with a younger friend the other day. We had the whole bar singing My Chemical Romance, Elena.
Oh, man. Okay. It's like that, huh? All right.
Yeah, just you know, just fucking being douche. Like, everyone knew the words. I thought that was even funnier. Dude, metal and punk and, like, crazy alt shit is really big down here. And there's a dope fucking underground scene in
town. I will come down and play.
That like dope underground scene in TJ. Like, you would have so much fun.
I'd love that. That'd be great. What year are we gonna do next, by the way? Are we gonna go backwards or forwards?
1984.
Okay. That was a very good year.
And that's the show that the 1001 album complaints guys will be on.
Oh no shit. That's gonna be fun. That's gonna be interesting.
I gave them the information. They confirmed. I am now confirming with you because I haven't sent you a message yet.
I'm getting my official confirmation on air. that rocks. Is it gonna be who else? Rob? Who else is gonna be?
I don't know who's all showing up from them.
That like the diaspora of like who's on that show is like, I don't understand how it operates, but I love it. Like I said, it's they've locked into a thing that's real freaking cool, and that should be great.
They really get into it too for like this happened this year. I really like that about that.
Yeah, the by the numbers segments is good stuff. So everyone
says my war would have been the theme song to this show had I been able to use it.
Yeah, if it wasn't immediate copyright strike.
I mean, look, hey, I can't lie. I actually, it's helped out Bitter Lake quite a bit to have that song be
there. Yeah.
You know,
oh my god, yeah, we get to get
out million plays.
84. Yeah, we got Van Halen, Zen Arcade, Husker Du. I'm talking to Greg Norton later today. I forgot about that. Power Slave, Iron Maiden.
Ooh.
Smiths.
Is that what
Double Nickels on the Dime, Minutemen? Holy crap.
84.
Twisted Sister, Stay Hungry. Yeah.
That's their big record.
That is a big record.
That's another group that you talk about, people that were around forever before they hit. Twisted Sister was like turning down deals. They're like, ah, we make more money in the clubs.
There's a documentary about Twisted Sister.
So good.
That it's so great. And I love that it ends right as they get their break. And it's like, dude, it's perfect because that's the stuff everyone knows. So like, you don't need to see the documentary on it. But like, you really get a sense for like, God damn, those dudes were in it. Those dudes were in it for in a it. Long time.
They Let were it be in the replacements. 84. For so long that there's parts of the documentary that go, yeah, and that's when things got rough when they changed the legal drinking age. You're like, before, God damn. Once they changed that drinking age, we didn't know if we could do it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God, Billy Ocean, Caribbean Queen.
Ooh, I just, you're speaking of discovering artists that you didn't know. So only Billy Ocean I knew is What You're Singing.
Yeah.
The song from that movie, License to Drive. Caribbean
yeah.
Queen.
Yeah.
He's got another song. Something called Tonight. I gotta find it. It's on that Yacht Rock playlist that I made.
Yes.
It is one of the best fucking funky yachty songs I've ever heard. And I was like, dude, Billy Ocean used to be known for this.
He used to be known for a lot of that stuff like that. By the way, Purple Rain. Yep. Purple Rain. Man, this is gonna be a wild episode. This is I'm interested in this. That's cool. I mean, these shows are great of the two that we have done so far. Mm-hmm. One of the easiest shows I've ever done in my entire life, though, because I would literally like, as you know,
yeah,
this is like basically just like being in the van.
This is what it is.
With an audience.
I wanted to do something, and to be honest with you and with everyone listening, I wanted to do something that feels like if you're on tour with people that you dig.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And if you get
that's
that
important clarification.
That, I mean, you can, any asshole can go on tour with their friends, but yeah, once people start pretending they're on tour, oh, look how much I'm drinking. Oh, yeah, it's like that guy is not going to be fun in 2 days.
No,
but when you're doing these long drives into the nothing and you're having these conversations about records, about production, about this, about that, I was like, what if I did a thing with Conan?
Yeah.
And we just slowly started adding more fun people to the mix. Like if we can add your boy from Devo to the mix and go, hey, you were literally there, brother.
Actually,
this thing happened.
I mean,
you tell us what the vibe of the what radio was like.
You know? He will, I assure you. Have you never had it? Have you had someone from Devo on the show? Well, I know past, a guy.
I walked past Mother's Ball at a GABA thing once.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm not sure if it'll be like immediately because there it seems like Devo's like more active now than. They've ever been, but
good for them.
But yeah, as far as like this format, you know, it's like what was that just cheese dick Beto O'Rourke quote? I'm just born to be in it. This man.
You don't he's like Candyman too. Don't say his name 3 times. Let Texas rest. He's done enough.
Pops up like Mr. Mixic Piddling.
We do not want to. Like,
right. Don't say it. If Justin Broderick does,
yeah, you know, the last time I was actually hanging out with him last year, I told him he has got to come on the show. He just looked at me and started laughing because he doesn't like doing interviews and he definitely doesn't like showing his face.
I got him to agree to be on Protonic and then he postponed on me. And then now, like, I'm like, all right, like, I'm gonna have to, like, it's like I gotta cajole you a little bit, I guess, but he does not.
The only way I could probably do it is if he was here, if he was in town, and I went and saw him in person, and maybe we did, maybe.
Yeah, I only got him to agree to do it in the first place because basically other people that he knows that have been on the show was like, yeah, you should talk to Conan, it's good. And even then, like, you could like feel. Yeah. The resistance to it, where it's like, oh, you don't want to do this, do you?
He doesn't dig it. He doesn't like talking. Not that he doesn't like talking to people. He doesn't mind talking. He's actually very friendly. I don't know if you ever met him. He's very friendly.
No. Just
but you know, he's got this thing where when it's a serious interview, it just weirds him out, and that's fair.
Yeah, you know, I get it.
Who wants to say the wrong thing?
Yeah, I mean, I get it. But anyway, 1984. That should be.
Someone says Ride the Lightning. Fuck yeah!
It was Ride the Lightning 84?
84, okay. Motherfucker.
Hell yeah!
Oh hell yeah, dude.
This is good.
This is all of my favorite metal shit came out in 84.
Yeah. What Saxon record came out in 84?
That comes out like 80. They have a record in 84.
I'm sure they do. They have like 40 records, dude. That like they have way more records than. There you go, Saxon Crusader, 1984. Boom. Oh my god, that record cover is hilarious.
That's our podcast with Justin. Oh yeah, Kevin probably got him to talk.
Yeah, I'll get the man to talk. I ain't worried about that. I seem to get him on the goddamn air first. Like that's the thing. I mean, it'll happen eventually. It'll be happening. But
dude, yeah, 84 is gonna be for me personally. That Van Halen has 84. Like I said, Ride the Lightning comes out in 84.
Dude, you need to look at this album cover for this Saxon record. It looks like a D&D supplement.
Oh my god, what is it called?
Yeah, I just put it.
And the motherfucker sent the wiki link. Sorry.
It looks like.
What is this?
What is it? Somebody was like, yep, that's record cover.
That's not even cool. The thing about the 80s is the 80s record covers are fucking dope, right?
Yeah.
Metal, like that's when Anthrax has the, what is that album called with Metal Thrashing Mad and Death Rider and all that stuff on it? You don't
know.
Fistful of Metal. And it's got the fist going through the dude's face. Like.
Yeah, isn't it weird that Scott Ian's in Mr. Bungle right now, by the way?
It is because Lombardo's in there.
Scott Ian's like it just in Mr. Bungle now.
He's just the dude now.
Awesome.
He kind of fits.
Yeah, he was kind of the, and I mean this as a compliment, kind of one of the weirder dudes in that
Yes.
And that like an appetite in the same way that Lombardo was for Slayer.
I always like the fact that Anthrax didn't take themselves that seriously.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And they weren't all demons and devils and stuff. Right. Because exactly. You know, demons and devils gets old. Again, three songs in. All right.
I'm not sure if I've ever seen the album cover for Fistful of Metal, but that is hilarious, dude. oh my god.
The Fistful of Metal album cover. Wait, can we hold on? We gotta find
this.
We gotta do this.
That's the one's got that Alice Cooper song, that cover on there.
18. Yeah.
Yeah. It is. Are you gonna throw it up perfect? We're gonna go off there. The show?
I gotta throw the before we go. We gotta throw
the first Bathory and the first Celtic Frost record. Wow. Okay.
Damn. Really?
Yeah. Okay.
So I got Celtic Frost on my.
I guarantee those dudes do not know what Bathory and Celtic Frost are. I assure you they don't know. Like it's gonna be hilarious. They're like, what?
I definitely
can't wait. Those guys are a blast.
I'm telling you, I made a playlist of, I call it old school metal, and it's only metal from late 70s to the, to the 90s, and that's when I cut it off.
All right.
And I tried to put doom shit in there from like small bands you never heard of. Sure. So it's not just the cathedral. Yeah,
look at this.
Look at this cover.
Somebody's like, yep, approved. Every once in a while I'll be like, man, is our shit too cheesy or like, you know, I'm like, nope, it's fine.
Look at that. Wrote Anthrax.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys were like this. We shouldn't be wasting all this for this show. We had you have a book cover for your book and it's like a paper bag. Oh, dude. I was practicing writing Anthrax and Metallica all over that.
Paper. Oh yeah, yeah, like yeah, that. Yeah. Get all the logos. AC/DC, freaking Metallica.
Oh dude, Slayer, right? Yeah. Slayer, all cool. Trying to write Megadeth in that weird way, dude.
Kids can't possibly still be doing that, right? There's no way. Well, there aren't famous logos anymore, and
they don't have books.
There's no books around about.
Can't do that on a tablet.
Yeah, that's.
You know what I mean? It's all.
It's not gonna hit the same.
Yeah, it doesn't hit a Trapper Keeper. If I gave my daughter a Trapper Keeper, she'd be like, "Why do I need a file holder?"
What are you handing me?
Yeah, what is this?
What is that
device you are handing me?
It'd be like the Oasis bro explaining what an album cover is to his child.
Oh, when my kid came up to me, my daughter came up to me, she goes, "Dad, you know there's a house phone at grandma's house?" She means her maternal grandmother. Mm-hmm. I was like, "Yeah." She goes, "Did you know you have to dial 1 if you're dialing a bit married?"
Oh, come on.
Tell me more. What else did you find?
I didn't know that.
You tell me more about the world that has passed you by. Tell me more.
Yeah. Oh,
wow. And then people like shake their head and it's like, yeah, you know, it's just a different world they grew up in. Imagine your grandparents telling you something about like how they had to walk to school in the snow and you're like, no, you didn't. Yeah, and then you remember that everyone, the modern city and modern suburbs didn't exist when these people were coming up. So yeah, life was different. Corporal punishment was legal.
Right. Encouraged even.
Yeah. I'm sure school was way different. You kids nowadays don't get the shit kicked out of you by the principal.
Yeah, maybe some things are for the best.
Yeah.
I'd like to introduce that for some adults, if you know what I mean. As long as I decide who's getting dished out.
But look, dude, Conan, just looking at this album cover.
For people on YouTube, we deserve a slap or two, if you know what I mean. But anyway,
fuck yeah, dude.
Shut the fuck up. Smack.
That's the thing I hate about the internet is that, you know, it takes away.
Well, you're doing a violence. You know, he deserved it. Sorry.
but you know what I mean? Like, it takes away that whole, like, hey, I shouldn't say that because this person may fuck me up. You know, I don't know what they're capable of.
Right. It's true.
Yeah. And now I don't have to worry about what you're capable of. You're just a piece of shit from, you know, hey, you're still a piece of shit. Oh, you mad, you piece of shit?
Yeah.
So, yeah, not a fan.
Anyway, this is
not a fan of name calling, but I am, you know what I am a fan of? This fucking album cover.
So, if you want a preview of what's coming up for the next episode of this,
1984 is going to be me
it's
talking.
It's going to be 90% Fistful of Metal. And 10% talking about how stuff is different than it used to be.
Oh, but you know what? And I'll end with this. That's also the only Anthrax record with Neil Turbin as the singer, who was their original singer before Joey Belladonna.
Oh.
And they re-record some of the songs for their follow-up EP. And then their next record, Spreading the Disease, Joey's on.
Right.
Belladonna, and then, you know, the classic album. I keep wanting to say I Am the Man. No, the classic record is Among the Living.
I don't know why this reminded me of it. Back in the New York Groove by Ace Frehley was a hit in 1979 as well.
When they all had the solo records. We forgot about that. Kids all had the solo records.
Yeah. 79. Sorry, but that's the sensible topic.
Oof. Oh, yeah. The Jesus and Mary Chain. Yeah, 84. Yeah, dude. It's good. 84 is going to be fun. I'm trying to plan these shows out, Brother Neutron, and
I'm ready.
I think it's going to be a very good time. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. Thank you guys for calling in, Dr. Claude.
Thank you
for the insane info dump on 1979. I did not know. Well, you called early and said it was a good year. I didn't know that you were going to have.
Didn't know you were going to list literally every album from the year. But peace and love. I love it. It's great.
But if you guys want the Bitter Lake, where you get the show, where the show is played, also has some playlists that definitely cover lots of songs from 79, 84. If you like metal and glam metal. So, and if you like yacht rock, that playlist is up as well.
Yeah, a lot of yacht rock love on this show.
Well, it's the only music that matters.
Look. That is most certainly an opinion.
Sailing makes me away. All right, thank you guys. Thank you, Conan, and we are out.
Russia was the Union of Soviet Social Republics. And they'd say, oh, but aren't you so glad that you're in America? I said, well, I know a lot of Russian filmmakers. They have a lot more freedom than I have. All they have to do is be careful about criticizing the government.